wise men.
I think I understand why we're playing this. I think.
I can't hear it because when you turn your microphone on, it cuts out the speakers in the room, and I didn't have my headphones on.
Well, listen.
Oh, I know these mellifluous tones.
This was a young singer back from the 1950s named Elvis Aaron Presley.
What was his brother's name? His twin that died.
I know this. Jesse. Was it Jesse? Mm-hmm. It was Jesse.
I think
Presley.
It was Jesse Aaron as well.
Oh, yeah. If you got a name working for you, why change it? Give it to everybody. Although in my wife's family, there are four girls and their middle name is Anne in every case. So I would have gone, I had no say in this, but I would have gone with a different name for each child, but they seem to like the name Anne a lot. So
is the mom's name Anne?
Nope. Mm-mm. And I think one of her brother's middle name is Anne too, I think.
But minus the E?
No, with the E. With the E.
I should have given my kid Snyder as a middle name.
Oh, that's interesting.
I should have.
My daughter's middle name is O'Neill.
Yeah, because of your wife's maiden name?
Yeah.
Is that why?
Mm-hmm. See, I really should have done that. But I tried to honor people in the family.
Oh, you did?
Uh-huh.
Oh. So who did you name them
Michael,
for?
Michael, Jim wanted a Michael, and his middle name is Turner, and that is for Jim's grandfather, Owen Turner. O.T., they used to call him.
They call him O.T.?
From Mississippi. O.T., I reckon.
I imagine he had a pickup truck for some weird reason, did he?
No, he was rich and a lawyer.
Oh, he was?
Yeah, he didn't have a pickup truck.
A rich lawyer named O.T. It just doesn't, my brain won't accept that for some reason. It keeps kicking it back. It won't take it.
And then Dylan, his middle name is Barrett after my husband's middle name, Barrett.
Now that name has some bite to it. Both names are solid, but Barrett, that's strong. That's a good name. That's a very good name.
I really wanted to name Michael Cooper in honor of Cooperstown for Jim.
Sure.
And he didn't want a soap opera name, as he said.
Oh. It does have a soap opera.
So is that bad?
No. No, it's not. But is today the anniversary of his death or is it his birthday? It's his birthday, right?
He would have been 81 today.
Think about Elvis Presley at 81.
I really can't. Although we were talking about Frank Sinatra, you know, how he had his 100th birthday.
Yeah.
And you can't compare them because your favorite saying, it's like apples to oranges.
Yeah.
They're really completely different. But, you know.
But both guys,
Elvis had a way better voice and was way more talented.
Oh, you think so? Than Frank Sinatra,
yeah.
Do you? Both guys, if you are going to compare those two, and I'll call them both greats, even though I'm not a fan at all of Elvis Presley's, I understand, I more than
his
understand.
His significance?
I think that's where the comparison would lie in how impactful they were on the culture, right? Both guys were absolutely the guy. When they were in their game, nobody came close to either one of those guys.
I would like to see an 81-year-old Elvis.
I can't. I can't think of it.
Would he go like dressed up like, you know, a suit and tie? Would he go just?
Would he still be dying?
He would still. Yeah.
Would he still be what?
Yeah.
Dying his hair.
Oh, yeah. I just want to know if he'd wear the jumpsuit at 81.
That's what I see.
Because that's not fair. Because the last thing we saw of Elvis was the Vegas jumpsuit Elvis.
Right.
And then he died.
Yeah. Yeah.
And his mama cried.
Lee, I need my Metamucil. Where's my Metamucil? Did you see him?
Does everybody think of Elvis when they're sitting on the toilet?
There was a time where I did, because that's the wrongest place to die. I mean, there's no good place. I like in my sleep. I'm going to go for in my
sleep.
What
if you're sleeping on the toilet?
You've never done that?
That's not happening.
After a good night, maybe.
Please bring me somewhere else. This is not going to end well.
Kevin,
I gotta sit somewhere else.
Kevin had a perplexed look on his face when I mentioned thinking of Elvis on the toilet.
No, I understood it, but it's still a bizarre thing.
Because that is not a good place to go.
But the irony.
Well, to go, yeah. But not to die.
The irony of the king dying on his throne is just as perfect as can be.
Although, did anybody other than Archie Bunker call it the throne? Did he start that?
I think, no. I'm trying to remember where the first place I heard that, but he was most famous for it. That's what he would call the toilet, or the turlet, as they sometimes called it.
And don't they also call the stool that a drummer sits on the throne?
Yeah, yeah.
That's weird, too. Right. It's a freaking chair. It's a stool.
Yeah. But it's
I just
throne.
Need to sit on a throne of some kind. I don't care where it is. I'm just going to pass away quietly.
That's
81,
so sad.
An 81-year-old Elvis does not make sense to me. Like, some people you can see old, but Elvis, I just can't. It doesn't fit.
He's touring in, like, Lakeland, Florida, and the retirement trailer right. home.
What's the place? Oh, Branson. He'd be there.
In Branson, Missouri.
He'd have a club there.
His own place.
Although, one night only in Tallahassee.
God, you guys, it would be so sad. How could he do the hip thrust with hip replacements? Poor guy.
And in other news, Elvis Presley had hip surgery again today.
I'll be playing at the Ramada Inn. Come see me at the Ramada Inn in Cheyenne, Wyoming.
After leaving one in Lincoln, Nebraska.
Ah, oh, well, hail King Elvis.
Elvis was startled by a sequence again this afternoon.
I'm seeing a flashing thing in my left eye.
No pictures, I said that.
Oh, I thought you meant from the sequins on his jumpsuit.
I did.
Okay.
I got to end the show early because Murder, She Wrote is starting in 12 minutes. I'm going to head out right now.
It's on TMC Classics now. You might not have known that.
Look at these two making fun of Elvis.
I know, laughing.
I mean, look at
jokes.
What we have laugh. You guys achieved?
We laugh in tribute.
At least Bill puts on an Elvis voice. Steve just says it in his
Steve's
regular
too
Steve
smart. Voice. Steve's too smart to do the Elvis voice.
He's not as good as you, that's what
no.
it is.
All
you
right.
do a pretty mean Elvis.
Thank you.
Not mean like he's terrible.
There, I
Take
think,
that, Silla.
Was there a mean Elvis?
Yeah.
Although as we were, Steve, you know the story. At some point he was watching television and Robert Goulet came on and he shot up the TV. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Is that true?
Was it in Vegas? I thought it was in Vegas, but...
But didn't Howard Hughes do that at some point, too?
Well, do you want to be in that club?
No. The people who are too rich to just watch
Change
television without... Right.
Well, as we learned yesterday at the very tail end of the show, if I play the Powerball and win now close to $1 billion tomorrow,
yeah.
if when all the cameras come to show, you know, WGN midday co-host Wendy Snyder wins, mm-hmm. you will shoot out the TV.
I will. That will... Actually, can I... I want.
By the way,
I
it's at $800 million. Now.
Right now it's at 800 million?
Yes.
I want to formally apologize. Can we come back? I need to apologize formally. Not just in kidding,
Why?
But I need
We're
to cuz. No, I know. Let's take a quick break and then a big apology coming. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
As the snow flies on a cold and gray Chicago morning, a poor little baby child is born in the ghetto.
I got goosebumps.
That's just a rash. That has nothing to do with Elvis Presley.
Come on, this is a gorgeous recording of this song.
This is, I will admit, this is very pretty. And he could sell a song, but the history of, you know the history of Elvis Presley. The music company was giving him songs that black artists were doing because they didn't feel that white America was ready to hear black people perform this music. So they were just giving those songs to Elvis Presley. And luckily, he was good enough to sell them and make big hits out of them.
I know that these songs were written by a lot of black musicians, but I didn't know that's why they actually handed it over to Elvis.
And not just Elvis. Pat Boone fits that same category. They were given songs.
He was so...
Pat Boone was Noel.
A little wussy.
Right.
I mean, he was talented in his own right, but how can you compare Elvis and Pat Boone?
Elvis would be, the reason we're talking, if you're just joining us, it would be his birthday today, and he would be how old?
81
years old.
And his brother, according to a texter, because I'm too lazy to look it up, it was Elvis Aaron Presley and Jesse Guerin.
Ah, that's right. That's right. He'd be calling bingo right now at some retirement center. I-22. Does anybody have I-22?
And he'd put little excerpts. He'd do little montages of his own songs. That's what right. he'd do. I'm all shook up. I'm shaking the bingo balls right now, everybody. That would be awesome.
What people would wait in line to have
I would
Elvis
buy a bingo
do.
Marker just for that reason.
Prize for this game's a teddy bear.
Oh, you got that. SNL should really be doing
it. I know.
That's really funny.
Let me quickly, if you'll allow me, to apologize. Yesterday, at the end of the show, we were talking about the fact that the Powerball is how high now, Steve? Is it $800,000?
$800 million.
That's even better.
It could hit $1 billion by Saturday.
So
which is...
you could give $1 million to 100 people you know.
Mm-hmm. That's what I said to
and
do.
And still have $700 million.
See, I said, you know, and listeners were suggesting this too, with the jackpot being so humongous.
Yeah.
it maybe we should pick 10 numbers and look at 10 people would benefit from it.
Sure.
Your odds are increased. Why wouldn't they do that? Who do I call?
Well, I'd rather win it all and give it to the people I know who I want them to have the money.
That is the devil's money. That is too much money for one person
win. Actually, that's part of the apology is we talked about your dream and many people's dream is to put down $2 and win $800 million. And I was saying it was unrealistic. And then I said, I hope you don't win because it would ruin you. And it would. It would ruin anybody. If you gave $800 million to anybody, it would ruin them. You wouldn't.
I could run for president.
Yeah, you could.
I could go head to head with Hillary. You want a woman in the White House? How about this one?
I got
your woman right here.
There's an option.
I wouldn't waste my money on that, quite honestly.
But I wouldn't. I said yesterday it would just be awful to think about you having all that money, and then I thought about it yesterday and. Now I hope you win it.
Yeah, you're only saying that because I offered to give a million to all of my friends
don't
here.
Give me, I don't want $1 million.
Okay, good.
I don't want it.
No,
oh,
and
come
I wouldn't.
On. You wouldn't
I
take $1 million?
Yes, he would in a minute, but that's the only reason he's apologizing because he started thinking about, oh, my God, she was going to give Kevin $500,000, maybe $1 million.
No.
I shot myself in the foot.
It has more to do with the fact that I realize that people are not buying tickets thinking they're going to win the money. You're buying a dream. You're going to have a nice dream for 2 days of what if I win all that money? And I don't want to crunch anybody's dream.
Crush it.
I don't want to crunch it or crush it.
So,
057. 057.
God, that's
Does
so
anybody
good.
Have bingo? 057.
I love that. You should send, let's record that.
You
Can
do
you
that?
Play Elvis? Do you have a jumpsuit?
Yeah, I got several jumpsuits.
I got here the winner of the game, a hunk of burning love for you.
Oh, see, he could pick. If he was alive today, they could have him pick the Powerball numbers.
Right. Wouldn't that be special?
Oh, God, he missed his calling.
Today's pick six coming up in just a little bit.
But that's, I think, what happened yesterday. Someone texted and says that they play the lottery every week because for a couple of bucks, it gives them hope for a week. I don't think his life is that bad, but it's a fun thing to go check your ticket.
But I think I've forgotten that in this whole equation. You know what this reminds me of? Seriously. One of my favorite movies of all time is Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. And there's that whole sequence at the beginning where everyone around the world is opening up Wonka bars hoping that the golden ticket is inside. And this is a real life version of that. Everybody who's down $2 is opening a Wonka bar and hoping they see a golden ticket.
Yeah, but you were so jealous of Charlie, you hated him for a while that he got the ticket because you were hoping to get it.
I knew it was a movie, but I wanted it. Do you remember they did that for real for a while, the Wonka company?
But what did you win?
Them? I don't think it was anything as cool as was in the movie, but you did win a prize
like
of some sort.
Like a candy bar on your birthday for 5 years
something
or something
like that.
Like that.
Yeah, it wasn't as good. I-22. Does anybody have I-22?
I'm trying to think of Elvis songs, and I can't to tie him in.
Isn't that weird?
I know, that is.
But you can think of his movies. Did you ever see the one where he was in the bar by the beach and he got into a fight?
Okay.
Did you ever see that one?
Coming up in the next game, blue suede shoes for the winner.
Right. The prizes would all be his songs. All right, I want to play.
That was Carl Perkins.
No, he recorded it. He made it.
Oh, okay, but no.
Yeah,
Perkins
both,
did
I
it
guess.
First. But,
yeah, but Elvis did it more famously, I think.
Oh, definitely.
Shoes?
Elvis
yeah.
did everything more famously. This
yeah.
lonesome-looking hound dog. Could be yours.
Love me tender. Oh, you could win some U.S. tender if your number is B4.
A new
and
heart,
after.
A heartbreak hotel.
All right, a break. At some point, I got to play some audio.
A heartbreak coming up.
Bertrand wants in. Go.
I know. Steve,
no,
go.
Never mind.
Go. Yeah,
sure
come on.
In the ghetto, everyone would leave the bingo parlor. No one wants to win that.
Should have kept it to yourself.
All right,
you
stop.
Me.
Steve's trying his best. Comedian Rachel Feinstein going to join us after Steve's news.
Why don't you give Rachel that joke, Steve? Maybe she'll use it.
She can close with that. And then,
it's Bully Friday, I see.
Oh, come on. Like, you don't bully other people, namely me.
Does that make it right?
You know, I am sick of that term bully.
Look what the money's doing to you, too. You haven't even won the money yet, and you're already changing because of this lottery money. Look what's happening.
Mom.
I'm going to play you some audio of a...
Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN, and I've just decided that napping is really great, and I think our next guest would agree with me, Rachel Feinstein, in the studio. Hey, Rachel.
Hey, it's good to be here. Yes, I like napping and feeding. I've been doing a lot of feeding.
But separately, you would not combine those two activities. You would do them separately, right?
My mom likes to remind people that I used to eat while I was falling asleep when I was a kid. That's her favorite anecdote about me.
You used to just sit there and slowly fall over, but you would manage to shove food in your mouth.
God, spoken like
a
true mother.
Picture. Everyone at home, I know you're aroused right now, but
cool down. I first encountered your work on satellite radio, and my favorite parts were always when your mom would be giving you advice or recanting stories from your childhood. Does she come and see you? Does she enjoy that when you do her on stage?
Yeah, she does. She doesn't like fully understand it, but she likes it. Yeah, she'll call it my little program or my talent show or something. Yeah,
that is so funny, the program. And does she see it as like a homage to her? Does she feel like you're making fun of her or
she
both?
She doesn't like it if I don't talk about her. She gets, yeah, she gets upset. She wants to be right in the middle of the talent show.
There was a time where TV would look at stand-ups like Gabe Kaplan or Freddie Prinze, and they would build a show around them. If you got a show like that, who would play your mom? Is there an actress that could do her justice?
I don't know. That's a really good question. I'm going to have to think about that for several. You should have emailed that to me.
I'll send that in advance next time.
Yeah, because don't you have a show that might be happening on Comedy
it's
Central?
Yes, really, it's not a scripted show. My mom's not in the, or like there's not a mom
not
character
yet.
Exactly.
But she's going to bust down the doors.
It's a show sort of anchored around my stand-up with some hidden camera elements in it too. And Amy Schumer and I are producing it, and I'm excited about it.
That's fantastic. Congratulations.
Thanks, guys.
That's
totally
great.
Love Trainwreck. I really...
Isn't it a hilarious movie?
It was hilarious. It was touching. It was...
I cried a lot of
roller coaster emotions going on in that one.
And I got to do a scene with Amari Stoudemire.
Yes, ooh. You did. Former basketball great, now acting great.
He was funny.
He's really funny. So is LeBron.
Oh, my God.
You know, everybody, the day he came to set, everybody was like so excited. And then, he was just sitting there so sweet. He brought like his whole family. And I remember this was, and they like were interviewing him. And this was before Amy is like as famous as she is now. And they were asking him questions about Amy. And he is like, you know, she's surprisingly down to earth. And I'm like, you're LeBron James. Yeah. But, and he's like, I remember when I got the audition and he was telling the steps of it. And he's like, and then they told me it looked like it was going to happen. And then it was like formally, I got the role. And I'm thinking, there was no audition. Like, you were playing yourself. It's not like you were up against anyone else. But I thought that was so cute that that's how he viewed it. It's like a series of callbacks, and then he waited to hear, did he get the part?
And wasn't Jake Gyllenhaal up for the role of LeBron James in this movie? Did I read that right? I thought
did.
He was up for that. So when they were writing it, they had to know whether or not he could act first, or even if he would be interested in doing the movie before they wrote the script,
that's a good point.
Right?
I have no answers to any of it, like how that happened. But I think Apatow was friends with him or something. So maybe he already knew he was like a funny guy. But he was really good fun to, like, you know, watching him. He was like, he could improv on anything. And,
yeah,
and he was kind of a shy, like, sweet kid.
Really?
Yeah, it's so funny how, like, I remember when he, like, left Cleveland, everybody, like, hated him for years. My brother, who lives in Bethesda, Maryland, had to, like, forgive him. I'm like, what are you talking? Yeah, you're like a nebbishy social worker. But he's like, I finally got to the place where I could forgive LeBron. He had to go on a lot of long walks. He had a lot of rage when he left. I'm like, you live in Bethesda. But it was so crazy how much was directed at him. And then you see him, and he's just sort of this, like, shy young guy, you know? But yeah, my brothers both, they've punched walls over like
that. But you know why,
stuff.
Right, Rachel? You understand why.
I know the story, and I know why it was really cool that he went back. And
right.
I get why people thought it was messed up. But I also think, you know, it's funny, I didn't come on here to defend LeBron. But I also know nothing about basketball.
I've made myself
an authority now. But no, I just thought it was funny that my brother, I get the story. I get why people felt both ways. But I think it was funny that my brother had a serious amount of rage towards
him.
Yeah. I'm like, you're a Jewish social worker in Bethesda. I don't think LeBron is affecting your life that much. Settle down.
It was like the ultimate story of somebody, LeBron or anybody, chasing the dollar instead of being loyal to his hometown and the people.
Oh, God. Doesn't everybody chase the dollar at some point in their life?
Yeah. I'm not saying that's the right thing to do, but he's probably also being pushed by his reps or whatever.
Oh, without a doubt.
I'm just shocked he was good in the movie because I hadn't really heard him talk. I don't follow his career.
Yeah.
And he was really good.
Yep.
He was hilarious. He was really fun.
When people who don't usually do movies, and I don't know if you had done any prior to this. Was this your first film, or had you done others prior?
I had done a small part in Chris Rock's last movie, and then some independent films. Oh, there's just people that watch us in the street through the glass. What an adorable, fun-loving family.
Well, they heard you talking basketball and a crowd gathers. That's how it works, usually.
So, oh, they're listening, too? Does this always happen?
This happens all the time.
I didn't know you guys had so many stalkers, like family stalkers. I like these
people.
This
is Rachel Feinstein. She's a stand-up comic, and she's going to be a
basketball analyst.
Up comedy club, when, tonight?
Yeah.
Yes, tonight and tomorrow.
Right, where are you guys from?
They look like they've never seen a Jew
before. Oh, Green Bay.
Go Packers!
No, goodbye.
That's it. They got cut. That was it.
You know, I thinking of this, you're talking about your brother. I love to do a little bit with our guests, like to see how wrong your Wikipedia page is. Because everyone we have talked to about their Wikipedia page will bring something up, and they'll go, that is so not true. Because, you know, anyone can edit it.
Yeah, somebody else made it, speaking of stalker. Yeah, mm-hmm. I think some stalker made it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I tried to make my own, you know, mm-hmm. being a radio legend in Chicago for 29 years.
Yeah,
I thought,
time.
You know, who would know me better than me?
Yeah.
And Wikipedia would not approve it, because you have to be, it has to be put in by someone else.
Really?
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
I didn't know that. Yeah.
So they're Nazis, the Wikipedia Nazis. I want to know if you...
It's strange. Yeah, I wonder who took even the time to make... There was one guy that was making a lot of unstable collages of us that he was emailing me. It would be like us on the beach.
Unstable in what way?
I mean, he was just doing a lot of cutting and a lot of photoshopping us onto sort of like date situations. Yeah.
The weird ransom letters, too, from magazines? Where was that anywhere?
I didn't get those yet. Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm a little jealous. I bet he sent them to the other girls. But
So did you grow up outside Washington, D.C.?
Yes, I did. That's true. Bethesda.
Were your parents a civil rights lawyer and a blues musician?
My dad is a civil rights lawyer and a blues musician.
Really?
You can be both.
Yeah, he was both.
Really?
He was a civil rights lawyer for many years. Yeah. Now he plays blues full time. He plays piano and zydeco accordion. He goes by Hurricane Howie.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
Your
How cool
dad
is
Hurricane
that?
Howie.
My dad is the original.
I didn't realize
Hurricane
that.
Howie.
I had no idea.
Had he always been diddling with the piano and the blues? And...
Yeah, he's an amazing piano player. He could do all those old cool New Orleans tricks and stuff, and plays harmonica really well too. And he prosecuted a lot of like KKK cases. He did civil rights for a lot of years, and then finally quit and did blues full time. He's an interesting guy. He was funny. He was odd. He used to send me letters at camp. And he would address them like Muhammad Jackson, the Reverend Muhammad Jackson Feinstein III. And then like a series of weird letters and codes like YK463. And now I think it's hilarious. At that time I was like, why does dad write weird stuff on my camp letters? But yeah.
You know there's an FBI file on you somewhere because of this, right?
I know.
It has to be.
The Reverend Jackson Muhammad Y246.
Wow.
but he was in, yeah, he had a band growing up called the Vomitones.
Get out
and
of
again,
here.
Now I think it's hilarious. When I was a kid, I'm like, why does dad have to wear his Vomitones t-shirt when he picks me up from school? At that time, he was practicing law, so he just had this, like, he thought it was funny to have this night band that he called it a night band.
Other attorneys them, with him?
Yeah, there was like a couple of guys from Bethesda, like local guys that had other day jobs too, and they played in the Vomitones at night, and then they played at my school on multicultural night.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, and my dad like put in an application to be part of cultural night. He said he was representing the rich heritage of Ghana. Again, there's just like a couple of white Jews from Bethesda, but they thought it would be hilarious.
But the blues scene
that.
In Bethesda, Maryland has never been stronger. You know that.
No,
that's
thanks
where
to
people
the Vomitones
to see.
Barfing all over that town, barfing their blues and cheer.
Everybody wants to be a musician except for you, I think, Bill.
Yeah, I know better.
But I know at 50, over 50, I started taking voice lessons. Do you want to be in a band? Are you starting a band?
I have no musical ability. My dad could pick up anything and play it, and I wish I had that, you know, because whenever I listen to stuff, I start to think that I can't, but now I'm worthless.
Isn't it strange, though, how that stays within a family? Usually, if a mother or father or both have that ability, it somehow gets passed down.
Yeah,
not in your case.
I got nothing.
All right.
All right, I'm checking the Wikipedia page.
Okay.
You know what? Can we take a quick break? And I want to ask you something that is on Wikipedia to find out if it's true, because so many people we have talked to, it's like... Who? Because anyone could just get in and edit that.
Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, that guy, the one that makes the collage, the one that's going to make a suit out of my skin, I think he did it.
He's a big fan of the Vomitones, though.
More comedy, more basketball analysis with Rachel Feinstein, who's performing this weekend. Go see her at the Up Comedy Club. It's Phil and Wendy, WGN.
All right. We are visiting with Rachel Feinstein, and her father, whom we learned through Wikipedia, which this was actually kind of correct, was in a band called the Vomitones.
Mm-hmm.
And Kevin thought that he had found some audio of the Vomitones from 1970-something, and it was a different Vomitones.
There's more than one band with that name.
I guess, but he is now looking up Hurricane Howie, which is her dad, and he is a pianist and a blues legend as Hurricane Howie. And did you find a song that...
Yeah, we found a little piano by Hurricane Howie.
Listen to this. This is great. I feel like I'm at Shakey's Pizza.
We used to go to Shakey's all the time, and I was like, how do you know about Shakey's?
I know some Shakey's.
There was one. There were a couple here.
Oh, they were all over here?
Yeah, they were everywhere.
Okay. For some reason, I just thought it was a Maryland thing, because it wasn't as much of a...
He's good.
He's very good.
Yeah, he's
good. You should have him open for you. Why doesn't he open for you?
That would be cool. I've done it once. We did a gig, like, once in Maryland. The band went on first. You don't ever want comedy to come after music.
Right.
They wanted more Vomitones. They were screaming, like, Vomitones, bitch. I'm like, I can't... Yeah, I can't provide you.
No, their set's over.
But yeah, my dad, they played at Multicultural Night, and then
go on tour or anything?
Now, yeah, he's in different bands now, and they play, again, like tour consists of like two dive bars they like to play in Michigan that he calls a tour, the Hands Across Uranus tour, that he has t-shirts of. But
can I ask a silly question? They're based in Maryland, but the tour takes place in Michigan. Is there
That's
a reason?
That's why it's a tour. Again, that's a long ride.
Well, I think it's just a connection they have with a few local bars.
Is that
Michigan.
What it is?
It's not exactly a traditional tour. They stop by. They have some friends
only.
In Michigan they just want to go have some beers with, so they fly out there.
I just see them saying, our music is not appreciated enough in Maryland. You know who would like it, though, is the people up in Michigan would enjoy this.
My dad does a lot of solo gigs, just like playing piano DC and stuff. But when he gets together with the Vomitones, because there's just so much demand to see them back together again.
Is there a Vomitones reunion tour coming soon?
Yeah, again, cool. Probably it'll be one to two dive bars. But when the Vomitones got together on Multicultural Night, a few of them played Blue Moon and mooned everyone.
Oh, they did?
Yeah. And it was like parent-teacher night.
Oh,
my mom
God.
Still says it was the most horrifying moment of our marriage. yeah, they just thought it would be good to play Blue Moon and then moon it. My dad didn't actually participate in the mooning. He said that his butt was too sweaty to get up at that moment.
Oh, God.
What a prince.
That's
everyone,
too bad.
He's taken. I'm
Everybody
sorry
missed
it,
out
ladies.
On a moment there. That's
but the
bad.
Rest of them did moon.
Yeah. Oh, well, good.
Well, my 16-year-old son is doing an acoustic blues gig this weekend. Would your dad like to fly in and play piano with him?
Oh, my God. That would be so cool.
Wouldn't that be nice?
I think he's doing something in D.C. this
weekend. Oh, man. And then he could go see.
I'll ask.
He could go see you for two shows, because this is, in fact, a piano bar, and my son doesn't know how to play piano, so he just does acoustic guitar and does blues.
So cool. He gets a lot of things around the hot, like private party things around the holidays, and then he goes and plays piano, and he wears his Vomitones t-shirt to his private gigs. But
he sounds so hip and happening, and your mom's so funny.
And you sound the right combination of embarrassed and proud. You're like right on that 50-yard
yeah,
line.
Yeah, partly horrified, but also proud.
Yeah.
He's very talented, but yeah, I mean, I could have dealt with like less of the mooning gigs when I was a kid. Yeah,
one mooning goes a long way.
It does.
Yeah, it gets around the neighborhood pretty fast. It gets around the cul-de-sac, a good moon.
If we may go
he
back.
He showed his cul-de-sac one of the times he mooned somebody.
If we may, for just a second, go back to the project for Comedy Central. You haven't done the pilot yet. That's coming up.
Yes.
And then what is it like after doing it and not knowing? Will you be nervous that whole period? Because a lot is at stake there.
Yeah. I'll be terrified. But I think it's like there's so many up and downs already that I went through that the good thing is that this thing comes over me where I expect nothing to happen. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you just sort of live in this state where you're just like, it's all over anyway. You know, like you just never expect anything. And then it's like a happy surprise when
sure.
it does. So, and I think a lot of people
hope for the
like
best,
that.
Expect the worst. Is that what they say? Or just expect nothing but hope for the best?
Something like that. Yeah. Or just live in a constant low grade depression. I don't know what the advice is.
Sure.
But, No, I mean, I think it's, I honestly do feel optimistic about it because I think, you know, there's a lot of good things about the show. And, you know, Schumer, Amy Schumer and Kim Caramelli and I are all producing and like believe in it a lot. And I'm excited about it. But yeah, there's always that part of you that's just like, you know, if it happens, it happens.
Right.
You know,
now's a good time to have Amy Schumer's name on something, though.
Yeah, for sure. She's producing my special with me, too. I have an hour special coming out on Comedy Central. That's airing in April.
Oh, that's good news, too. Wow. Yeah. Well, things are good. This is a you got a lot going on.
Maybe
right
I'm
going
to make it in show business.
As they
said
in every
movie. That's right. I think I'll make it in the business. The aren't business you the show.
Aren't you the daughter of one of the Vomitones?
Well, it is true. I am related to an actual Vomitone. And that's why I'm going to be a big show business movie star. Mr. Hollywood said it.
All right. She's Rachel Feinstein. You can see her at Up Comedy Club, 230 West North Avenue, tonight and tomorrow. Two shows each night, 8 and 10:30. And come back and see us before your special on Comedy Central airs. And good luck with this new project.
I'd love to. You guys are always really nice to me. And I like the people in the window. And
aren't
I
they nice,
stay
the
here.
People in the window?
They're a kindly bunch. They really are.
You can stay.
Take a nap here. As long as you want. We wouldn't kick you out. Rachel, good luck. We're thrilled
guys.
Things are going your way.
Thank you so
a
much.
A quick break and then more ahead. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Steve, thanks. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. And if you want to join in, 312-981-7200 is our phone line and our text line. Later on, we'll talk to Josh Davis once again from Apt Electronics. He's been stationed at the Consumer Electronics Show all week. Today's the last day. So he'll give us kind of a rundown of what's going on the last day of proceedings there. We started out the show today by talking a little bit about this Powerball lottery, which, as Steve mentioned earlier...
Has it gone up even more?
I think it's around $800 million right now.
And they're anticipating it being...
A billion.
$1 billion by the time those numbers are drawn Saturday night, 7 p.m.
It doesn't mean if you were to win, you would get $1 billion because
who
you're taxed
needs $1 billion? That is the devil's money. That's too much. You
too much money.
Split it up. Pick 100 winners, and then you do the math. Everybody's going to get what?
If you had 100 winners?
Out of a billion. What's a billion divided by 100? I don't go that high.
I'm not doing math in front of you. Mm-mm.
Is that
wouldn't it be 100 million?
Yes.
Each?
Yes.
That's still a pretty good amount.
Yes.
I don't think that's too much money, a billion. If I won, I want to be able to buy like a small country or something.
Because you want to just say, how much did you win, Kevin? And you go... $1 billion
with his finger in his mouth, which you could afford to have somebody put their finger in your mouth for that much money.
I'd put someone's finger in my mouth for that kind of money.
So you were, as everybody else in the world who's so caught up in this is doing, you were kind of fantasizing about what you would do with the money. That's what you're buying. You're buying a dream. You're buying a, if I were to win, what would I do? That's
it's a little game. Fantasy for a few hours.
Sure, right. And for $2, I guess, why not?
But for $2, so I do agree with you that some people will go hog wild.
I saw a story yesterday. Who was it? Where was this guy? He said, they go, how much are you going to put down? He goes, $500. Like, without even flinching. I'm going to throw down $500. I'm going to buy 250 tickets.
He's not going to win for sure.
Not even a flinch. That's a lot of money.
It's just going to happen where somebody for the first time ever puts down and buys one ticket.
Right.
It's going to be a quick pick, and that's how it's going to happen. And it's not going to be in Illinois.
Right. Let me play some audio for you that I hope you find disturbing. I did. It's
that's your goal?
Yep. That's why I'm here. This is out of Primm, Nevada. You know Primm, Nevada? That's the
next
town
to proper?
It's the neighboring city to proper Nevada. It's that part of Nevada that isn't Las Vegas. Have you ever seen that city on a map?
No.
So they were doing what every reporter has been doing for the past 48 hours. They were going to places where people were filling out their picks, and they were asking them what they would do with the money. And this guy was pretty honest, I think. Listen to this.
We're here at the line where people are doing it the old-fashioned way. They're just filling out bubbles here. I want to turn some of these people around and ask you guys, sir, can I ask you what your lucky numbers are?
I'm going to pick 14, 24, 2, 7, and 15.
Oh, those are your lucky numbers. Can I tell you what? Do you know your chances of winning?
Slim to none.
Slim to none. You're right. Let me tell you, it's one out of 292 million. What do you think about that?
I knew it.
You knew it. Your numbers are lucky, though. Am I right?
I hope so.
Can I ask you, if you won all the money, what would you do with it?
Bunch of hookers and cocaine.
Oh, okay.
Sure, why not? If you've got all that money, get yourself some hookers and cocaine.
You don't need all that money to get hookers and cocaine.
You could do it on a better budget, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, God, you could do it this weekend. Just it may not be the best hooker in the world, and the cocaine might not It might blow. Whee!
I get it.
All right. Am I right? Who is this reporter?
Well, I don't know her name, but I can't tell you the color of red that she turned when he said that. And then they cut back to the anchors, and they're looking at each other like, we've got to stop doing live reports. It never ends well whenever we do a live report. We have to stop asking people questions on live TV.
Now, the viewer side of that is, I love live television. I love live reports. This is going to be some audio Bill Leff will play on that WGN radio show to disturb us.
If you see this guy, though, Wendy, you say to yourself, yeah, that seems about right. You see this guy, and they ask what he's going to do, and he goes, hookers and cocaine. And when you see this guy, you go, I can see that. All right. I can totally see that.
At least he's honest.
I know. I know.
Do we know how much this guy paid? Because he seems the type to pay, I'm going to put a couple hundred down. I mean, don't do that, people. That's really not going to up your chances that much.
Well, here's the thing I think is funny. And keep in mind, I'm not a whiz with numbers. I can
You're
add
pretty
and
good,
subtract.
Though.
But most people, they think, if I buy one ticket, okay, those are my odds. But then if I buy a second ticket, I cut my odds in half.
That's not true.
It's not true at all.
Your odds are better that you'll win if you get a different number. What are there people that buy the same number a couple times so they don't have to split the pot?
I've heard stories.
That's stupid.
That there are people who will pick the same exact number. Like they'll do one ticket and then they'll do another with the same exact numbers so that if more than one person guesses those numbers, they get two shares instead of one share. You just harmed your already infinitesimal chances by doing that. You've made your chances even harder.
That's a stupid thing to do.
Isn't it?
All right, Frank, what are we doing here with the whole Powerball? Are you going to play?
Of course, but I know that it's almost like money thrown out the window, but it's fun to play if you play responsibly, and that's the whole slogan of the lottery. But I'll tell you something, the states are licking their chops because they receive a great portion of this from tax revenue when someone does win. But what I really wanted to say was, once the jackpot really escalates over a certain number, they should really allow more people to win. This way, it isn't distributed to one single person. What I'm hoping is that a group of people win, whether it's from an office or whether it's from a school or just anywhere, hopefully like 20 or more people win this thing.
I agree, and I think the lottery officials should, once it hits some ungodly number, they should make it so, okay, there's been so many rollovers, it's up so high, we're going to pick 10 winners. Because really, look at the odds, and then people are still going to win.
But they can't change the rules midway through the game. They can't. Everybody who's already purchased a ticket or is it going to, they're buying it on the belief that they've got a chance at $1 billion or thereabouts.
The devil's money.
It's the devil's money.
I'm with you. People should split it. More winners. That's what I'm hoping too, Frank. And I hope you're one of them, and I hope you'll remember me.
Well, whether or not it's one winner or 20 winners, the state's money is going out the window anyways. So they really don't care whether it's one person that wins or 20. That money is going out the window or it's being distributed. But it would be nice if more people would win and it might get more people to play. Who knows?
Interesting. Thanks,
Frank.
Thank
you so much. And, Bill, your math may not be as good as you thought it was because Pete seems to think you're wrong about something.
I probably am.
Hi, Pete.
You're 292 times more likely to get struck by lightning than win the Powerball.
Right. Right. And then I said this yesterday, Pete. The country has roughly 320 million people in it, so it's the equivalent of them just putting their hands in a barrel and picking a name, and everybody in the country's name is in the barrel. And then picking your name. Those are roughly the odds of winning.
I know, but here you go down that path again, because you did say earlier that that's how, you know, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, he got that golden ticket. Someone's going to get this.
Right. At least one person will. But maybe, again, maybe not this week. This has gone 17 straight outings without a winner. It could go 18. It could go 19. It could keep going.
Are you playing, Pete?
I am. I'm going to get one.
Just
yeah,
one ticket?
I think I am, too. I was going to do $20, and I thought you were calling to dispute that if someone gets the same number so they don't have to share it with anyone else if they win.
Yeah.
You had said chances are worse, but it's not that your chances are worse, but it's that you've wasted money, basically.
Right. You could have used that same money in doubling down your ticket in buying a different set of numbers.
Right.
That would make a lot more sense.
That's what I thought it was.
Statistically, it's still zero.
It's still right. It is. It's right around zero.
No, it isn't. Yeah. It's one in 292 million. Now, you guys are just, you know.
Okay, there you go.
Good luck. I hope you win, Pete.
Good luck, guys. All right.
You're not going to buy one ticket.
I'm not.
Should I buy one for you?
No.
What if I buy one for you and one for me, and I put a W on one and a Bill on the other, and the winner is you, and then I scratch it out, and you see it, and I'm like, oh, my God, look, I won. And you could, you'd then know that that was, well, the ticket I was supposed to
get. Then I would say that the W is also mine because it's W for William. Uh-huh. So either way, I would win.
You were a good gambler, weren't you?
I was a pretty good gambler. Now, here's something. Wait, let's take a break. We can talk more about this because I know that every line is ringing. 312-981-7200. It's Powerball Mania. Are you affected by this? Are you buying tickets? Do you think you have any kind of a chance at winning?
And we have five secrets from a lottery expert on how you can win.
Oh. All right.
Now you're going to play?
Now I'm still not going to play. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Oh, I'm going to be a rich woman soon after I win the Powerball.
I always thought that if you won something like this, that you could be anonymous, that you could say to the lottery, look, I got, you know, those Powerball winners. I have them. I matched every number.
They don't let you anymore.
I don't want people to know who I am. They don't let you anymore.
They have to identify the winner. Ken, your friend was identified as a winner?
Oh, yeah. Well, this is about 30 years ago, and this was just on Lotto, you know, so the prizes back then were just like $1 million.
That's all I need. Really, who needs $1 billion?
Right. Well, he went to, and back then he played on a, everybody played on a card. I think that might even before Quick Picks. But anyway, so he had his card and he went, stopped into a liquor store with an attached saloon. He stopped at the counter at the liquor store, played his card, got his ticket, went into the saloon, had a few, got stiff, leaves, and remembers he has his card for Lotto, plays his card again. So he played the same numbers again, and he ended up winning. There were three winners, and so he was two of them. So he got two-thirds of the jackpot, whatever it was, I don't remember. But that was in Chicago.
So that was an instance where buying two of the same numbers would benefit you.
But it ended up paying off for him, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, when it's the jackpot is this big, you don't have to do that.
No.
And did it turn him the wrong way? Was everything bad in his life? Was it the old lottery winner's curse after that for your friend, Ken?
No, he did all right. You know, he didn't go nuts. But, you know, he lived comfortably. He just kept on with his life.
Isn't that what we all want, just to not have to struggle when the mortgage check comes up? That's really it.
Sure.
I mean, we don't need much more.
I guess there's a moral in there somewhere about
drink up. Yeah, you got to drink to win.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Ken. Appreciate that story.
In that guy's case, that worked, though. The fact that he had too much to drink made him a lot wealthier.
This is the best idea I've heard all day. And when I win the lottery, the Powerball bill, listener bill, I'm gonna give you some money, but not partner
not
bill.
Not me. I don't deserve it.
What's your idea?
Hey, am I on?
Yeah.
Yeah, what's your idea?
Well, you know, we're talking about, you know, having more winners. So, and I think every time the game is played that someone should win. So every time they roll it over and they rolled it over 17 times, there should be 17 winners pulled.
I like it. Can't they change it? Why can't they change it, Bill?
They can't change it mid-game. Like if
after this winner, they can.
Yeah, I guess. But people, you know, people are greedy. They don't want to share it with 16 other people. They want to win it all.
Hey, you could give up a little if you're out of a billion. You could probably split it with 17 people.
Yeah, maybe. I guess.
What do you mean, maybe? If somebody said, I'll give you $1 billion if you split it with 16 people.
I would take that.
All right, then.
But the reason people are waiting in lines for 90 minutes to fill out these cards to win the money is because they see in their eyes $1 million payoff.
Well,
$1 billion payoff. I'm sorry.
That's because the stupid radio DJs are talking about it. The
you can't
news
trust
media.
Those radio people.
But, I mean, everybody is talking about it, so it's on everybody's mind. And now you're thinking, oh, God, I may as well play.
Right.
Are you playing, Bob? Or, excuse me, Bill, are you playing?
Absolutely. I'd buy $20 every round.
Have you won?
Every round? So twice a week you put down $20?
Yeah, every week I buy $20 just because.
How many times have you won?
I won $3 once.
Oh, all right.
Holy crap.
All right.
Yeah.
We stand corrected then.
there.
All right. Well, good luck. Your phone's breaking up. Thank you for calling, Bill.
You've seen the stories. Sometimes they're in the local papers or in magazines where they revisit the lottery winners 5 or 10 years later. And many, many, many times, it's not the pretty story you would think it would
be. It's the curse.
There is some sort of a curse because we're not built, our brains are not built to understand what to do with that kind of money. If you've lived your whole life living paycheck by paycheck and all of a sudden you have a gob of money like that, look at athletes and stuff who grew up in tough lives and all of a sudden they've got $1 billion contracts and they don't know what to do. They lose their houses. They lose everything.
That's new money, Bill.
That's
and new money
is.
Ruins you. If you work hard and long to get to your rich status, good for you, but
yeah.
New money hurts you. Bob, what do you think about that?
Oh, I think it's stupid. I don't mean to rain on everybody's parade, but one of the things I noticed or I'd heard this morning was that the lottery changed the rules. I've never played any of it, but you've got, I guess, these field numbers, which I guess are the white balls, and then you've got the
one Powerball, yeah.
And the Powerball. Well, they raised the number of white balls from 1 to 59 to 1 to 69, and then they decreased the red Powerballs by 9, which effectively changed your odds to 1 in 176 million
wow.
to 1 in 293 million. So people are thinking...
Somebody's got to be that one, Bob.
Wendy, I hope it's you.
No, you don't.
But when you hear those odds, the odds that were just given, 1 in 293 million, don't you just go, well, that's obviously not meant to be.
Exactly. I completely agree. I would not spend the money because if it lands in Illinois, some politician's going to misspend it. And, you know, that $20 bill looks just as good in my wallet as it does in somebody else's.
True.
And I know this is going to sound like a bunch of BS, but when I was 23 years old and I started out in radio, I never thought that I would be working at WGN Radio someday.
Sure.
So in a sense, I've won the lottery. Not many people get to remain in their hometown and end up on WGN Radio.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously.
So you've beaten the odds. You know that it's possible
so
to beat
the odds. So did I screw myself for the Powerball?
Because sure
I'll give this job up if I win.
Yeah, you did.
You guys keep up the good work.
Thank you so much, Bob. Have a great weekend.
Really,
take care.
I'll give this. If I win, I'll just let you do the solo.
Oh, that's fine. But think about the people now who are going to stand in line for an hour and a half.
No, they're not going to wait for an hour and a half.
They showed people yesterday waiting for an hour and a half just to fill out a card, to hand in their card to register for this lottery.
You can do it online, people.
Oh, you can, right?
Yeah,
can't
don't
you?
Wait in line. Although I don't have a computer. Well, you can buy one when you win.
Right.
Good luck to everyone.
Right.
I do have five ways to make your chances of winning better.
Okay,
should
good.
We do that sometime before we get out of here
Absolutely.
Today? Maybe even in the second half of the show?
Yes.
All right,
yes,
cool.
That's what's coming. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Do you think there's a virtual reality love roller coaster? Because I would like to be on it.
Wouldn't that be nice? Wouldn't that be special? Josh Davis has joined us each day this week. He's in Las Vegas at the Consumer Electronics Show. Today's wrap-up day, Josh. No more after today, huh?
This is it. This is our last chance to scoop up what we can and see what we miss.
I hear a tear in your eye, Josh. Am I imagining that? I hear a little tear.
I have a 2-year-old at home, and I can't wait to get back.
All right.
All right, well, tell us about, on your little list of things that you want to talk about, the must talk about is the spherical video, 360-degree video. What is this?
All right, so you guys have Facebooks, and you check out your Facebook news feeds. You see pictures. You tap on them, you look at a picture. You see a video. You tap on it. You watch your video. Here's the future that's happening now, and it's going to continue to happen, and everyone listening that uses, like, Facebook or checks YouTube is going to have this experience. Imagine... You tap a video that your friend posted or whoever posted, and you're looking at the video. But now you could drag your finger like left or right, and as the video is playing, you're actually looking around. You're looking to look up. You could drag it down. You could look to the left or right. If someone's walking towards you about to pass you, you can drag it around. So suddenly you're watching him walk away from you. It's a three-dimensional world you will be in with pictures and videos, and that's because there's all these new cameras here at CES that allow anybody to capture it.
Nothing is sacred anymore.
Mm-hmm.
People can spy on everybody from every direction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, you got to be careful. If someone's holding one of these new cameras, it doesn't matter how they're holding it up. They are getting everything, up, down, behind them, in front of them, and all they're doing is pressing the button.
That's pretty cool.
Josh, it used to be when I would go to the Consumer Electronics Show here in Chicago or even a few in Las Vegas, the things that you would see you could buy in a couple of weeks or months, but at some point during the year. But now I keep hearing people say that a lot of these things will never actually hit the market. They're just prototypes and stuff like that. Is that the case?
You know, it really depends. So, like, this thing I just referenced, it's so exciting because, I mean, a lot of companies have them on the market. They're on their way, like, now, a month, 2 months. They're really, literally, around the corner, more available. Some big companies that are slow to join it because they're taking their time, like Nikon, for example, huge camera company. They have an amazing product they showed off here that it does that, but they're not coming to market yet. They're saying, everyone says it'll be out in 2016. They just don't have dates and times. The ones that you're talking about, great example, yesterday was drones. We were in Drone City all day. We recorded tons of drones. One drone, you actually, it's so big, you're going to get inside the drone, and it'll automatically fly you to a location.
That is my new way to work from now on.
Take the drone in?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's only got a 30-minute battery, so you better watch out how far away work is.
Well, a drive is only 30 minutes, so how fast does this thing go?
Well, I'm pretty sure it runs around 40 miles per hour, but stuff like that, you're not going to see that in the market. There's all these rules and regulations.
Right.
You know, you're not going to see stuff like that hit the market in a week or two. You know, big audio companies, they have new speakers that are coming out now. Headphones are coming out now. Lots of new merchandise will be hitting the market this year and pretty quick.
I was reading online last night about some of the things that are at the Consumer Electronics Show this year, and they were talking about how in most cars, they're showing systems where you could have your computer right there on your dashboard, and you can web search if you want to. But if you're driving, is that a good idea? It's illegal, isn't it, to be doing that while you're driving?
Well, a lot of these manufacturers, you know, we went to Alpine, a big manufacturer of something of what you're talking about. Later today, we are going to Pioneer and Kenwood, and then we'll see the big picture of what's out. But these dashes they're installing, they do have all of these fancy features. But really, it's more towards, a lot of it's towards just being a safer driver. People that are looking at their phones to do things, suddenly, you know, I could punch something in by just tapping or swiping once and keeping my eyes on the road to pull up information, maps, directions, streaming content of like Pandora Radio. And there's not much you're doing to interact with these new sets. You know, they've added all these different gestures, so you could reach over, swipe one way, and it's doing one thing. Mm. Or they had hard buttons. You could press this button you've configured to do X, Y, and Z instead of fussing around with your dash. So I wouldn't be concerned. I don't think drivers are staring at the center of their front vehicle watching a movie while they're driving.
Although I've seen that on more than one occasion. Yeah. I've seen people do that.
You know, technology is supposed to make our lives easier, but it really puts the pressure on us to get all the newest and coolest things that are out there.
Yeah.
Record players, for instance. Yes, vinyl is very popular with some of, with a lot of the bands now. They release vinyl issues as well. Mm-hmm. My son wanted a record player, and you'd check out Goodwill, or I was bothering my sister going, you never use it. Can we have that? But record players are back in a big way. Huh?
Yeah, they absolutely are. We saw a whole bunch yesterday. You know, a lot of people that have had records, or there may be somewhere they decide to bring them out. Maybe a lot of people want to convert their records so that they can put it into their smartphone and get that music that's, you know, maybe a little unique that you don't find at the iTunes store and stuff like that. So a lot of these record players, almost all of these record players, they have USB connections. They plug into computers, and they allow you to turn your record into a file that goes on the computer. And now you can dump it on your smartphone, your tablet, and listen to it wherever you go. So that's one little element to it. And, you know, that's something where you can also take your old cassette player, plug it into your record player you just bought, and transform all those old cassettes that have some good content into your, you know, usable space. But the bigger element would be quality. You know, a lot of audio files, they're looking at analog as the top-notch king of the hill for audio.
I love analog. Analog is the way to go.
Yeah, no, that's a common, everyone agrees in the high-definition music industry is that analog audio is fantastic. Now, there are high-definition compressed stuff coming out now that's becoming a big theme, but, you know, people have records. They have tons of records, and they're not willing to go out and spend $10,000 on high-quality audio files, and they just want a way to tap into that analog, you know, disc they have laying around. So, yeah, you'll see stuff that's really nice for, like, $50. They don't have to get crazy. There are really nice ones, but we were looking at the company Ion. They had all these different ones for $50, $99. They were pretty cool looking. They have great designs, and they have all those features I referenced.
I have bookshelves. I have thousands of albums mm-hmm. in our basement. And the only thing I use them for is if we ever have these people in as a guest, they can autograph them.
Good. That's
but
a
now
good
I
reason.
Can flame. God, $50 that, and
that's
even under $100.
That's not bad. With you winning this $1 billion lottery, you could afford tons of these.
You're still not getting any.
Josh Davis is our guest from Apt Electronics. He is in Las Vegas, Nevada for the Consumer Electronics Show. Now, Josh, I know all the big companies set up and they show their products, but in the past, Apple has not been present for one reason or another. Is that the case again this year? Is Apple boycotting the show?
Well, the entire show consists of all these different locations in Las Vegas. You've got the Las Vegas Convention Center, the Venetian, kind of the Sands Expo Center. So all over, there's all these booths, there's all these setups, there's all these vendors. And Apple is not a part of that. So whether or not they're here, I do not know. You know, some companies are kind of off the grid. Like the company Asus, for example, they're not at the main show. They have their own little private, they own like a, they rent out or, you know, get a like a whole hotel floor at the Trump, and it's kind of off the map, and it's more by appointment only. It's not really for everybody to show up and storm through it. So some companies do it differently. I have no idea where Apple fits into the equation. They typically are never here at CES.
Yeah.
We're talking to Josh Davis. He's the technologist over at Apt Electronics in Glenview. And I'm just wondering if you saw, while in Vegas at CES, if you saw Siegfried and Roy's virtual white tiger, because I've been told that's awesome.
No, I've seen a lot of the CES show floor, and that's about it.
All right, what's the coolest thing? The winner is, what is your one prevailing theme or idea for CES 2016?
It is clear, and it's everywhere, and it has many faces. It would be virtual reality. And I just touched on it with you guys at the beginning of this call, where you have these cameras that create this content. But there's whole other elements here, like, for example, the Oculus Rift. That's that big controller piece you see people wearing against their heads and looking up and down and smiling because they're having fun in a virtual world. The Oculus Rift is kind of the king of the hill, and it's never been available until now. Pre-orders started, I think, yesterday or the day before, and they're coming out this year. They're shipping in February and March. So that's a big deal that people now have access to the real Oculus Rift virtual reality machine, which Samsung already has on the market with their own method, like the Samsung method. You take your phone, I said in the past, and snap it into this thing. But the Oculus Rift, I don't need a phone or anything. It's its own system. The screen's built.
Uh-oh.
Oh, Josh?
One thing that's not the prevailing winner at CES is a cell phone.
Cell phone technology is still not what it should be, evidently.
All right. Well, that's the way to do it, is virtual reality. I don't know if I even have any...
I'm not sure, other than playing games with it, because everybody's talking about what a big deal this will be this year and in the future, but other than the fact, I know there's practical applications for it down the line, but if you got one today, other than playing a game, what would you do with it?
Yeah, I don't know. Josh, we just wanted to let you wrap up.
All right. Well, yeah, I was just saying that there's many faces to that virtual reality world, also accessories, you know, people that are in these worlds. They're controlling it with special controllers. We saw guys yesterday. There's this big black, like, circular thing that they're running on. It allows them to be stationary but run. And they're running around in these virtual worlds, and there's lots of cool accessories. So everywhere around CES, someone's got something that has to do with virtual reality, and I think it's going to really hit hard this year. So that's, I'd say, the big winner as far as teams go.
See, now, you just said running around, so that would be a good application for it, is if you're a jogger, you could be on a treadmill.
Or a giant record album.
Or
like
a giant record
like
album
that.
And jumping over the needle every time you get to it. But you could pretend you're running in any city or country in the world. They could do that, couldn't they?
Oh, yeah. There's going to be a lot of elements that are going to come into the equation here. And a lot of these guys that are out at CES, you know, they're putting on the table solutions for developers and other people to really take what they've put on the table and make their own version of it. Like when Apple came out with the App Store, it was like, here's a cool way for you guys to make fun stuff, and then millions of stuff started pouring into it. So we'll see that with virtual reality in a big way.
That's pretty cool. All right, his name is Josh Davis. When he's not at CES in Vegas, you can find him at Apt Electronics in Glenview. And where can we see some of these videos again? There's a YouTube channel with Apt, and where else should we go?
Yeah, the Apt YouTube channel's big. We recommend you subscribe so you get the email content updates when we push through blog.apt.com. Or if you're just shopping at apt.com, you'll see a big banner with the media crew, myself, and Adam and Ben. We're all here doing this for you guys. You can click the banner to get more information, too.
And we have put some of the videos up at WGNradio.com. Thank you so much for all this interesting insight into the world of technology, and Godspeed.
Thank you for the partnership. It works out wonderfully.
Thanks, Josh. Take care. Have a safe trip back.
He's a good guy.
Josh Davis. Again, Apt is spelled A-B-T. If you go to aptelectronics.com, take a look at everything we've just discussed with you there.
Techno geek.
Yeah.
Tech geek.
Yeah.
Techno. Yeah, I guess it could be either.
A little bit. A break, more show, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
I forgot today was Friday. This week has certainly gone quickly.
It was a fast week. Today is Friday.
Do you ever notice when your week is cut short, like my kids didn't go back to school till Wednesday, and they said that this week seemed like it was the longest week of their lives, and yet we worked 5 days, and didn't it fly?
It went very fast. Yeah, I don't know. I don't understand that principle at all, but I've heard that, yeah.
I've had that happen, too. Like, if we, like on Labor Day, we come in on a Tuesday, and for some reason, even though it's a shorter week,
it drags
feels
a little
yeah.
bit. I don't know why.
Well, it's all leading up to the big Powerball drawing on Saturday night, I believe 7 p.m., so hurry up and get your ticket, because it could turn into an $800-plus million winning ticket.
Right.
And Forbes.com has put together some things from a guy that I know we have talked to. He's been on every radio show in the world. His name's Richard Lustig, and he's the author of Learn How to Increase Your Chances of Winning the Lottery. And you asked me something off the air, and I do not know the answer to that.
Hmm.
If he had like a big payoff one day to make him write this book.
I would trust somebody more, I guess, who had already won it once or twice or three times. Every once in a while you hear a story about somebody who's won the lottery two or three times. That's not fair. It's against the odds to win it one time, but something's up if you're winning it two or three times.
Well, Lustig's main tips don't all follow strict mathematical logic, and many of these tips have been discounted by many people as nonsense, but we will give you five of them that Forbes.com put together, and, you know, if it helps you, good luck.
Mm-hmm.
It says don't use quick pick numbers generated from the store's computer, and I've heard completely the opposite of that.
I don't know why you'd have an advantage in picking your own numbers or a quick pick. Either way, they're just numbers.
Random numbers.
Yeah, so I don't know why.
It says, even though it seems like every number has an equal amount of luck, certain numbers sets are better than others. I will tell you this, and it's a little geeky of me.
Yeah.
When I worked at the Loop radio station and I was just starting out in radio, I worked overnights playing a lot of rock and roll hits, and I had a lot of downtime in between the songs.
Yeah.
And Terry Gibson, who also worked overnights, started playing the Little Lotto on a regular basis. And he showed me this system where you would get graph paper and chart how many times, like, say, the number two came up. And I don't know, I don't know what I was doing, but I know that I played on a regular basis. And there seemed to be kind of a pattern developing. Like, almost always there are two consecutive numbers. Almost always.
Can I disprove that very simply?
Yes.
If I had a coin and I flipped it 100 times and it came up heads 100 times in a row, what would the odds be of me flipping it 101st time for it to be heads or tails?
Still 50-50.
50-50. So if the number, if they did a lottery every day for a year and the number two came up every single time and people went, well, the number, there must be something going on with the number two. Nope. The odds are still the same.
All right, but I'll tell you this. Almost always, and if you do nothing, look at winning numbers from now on, even if you don't play.
Yeah.
And almost always in like a lottery or someone where there's at least five numbers chosen.
There's a consecutive.
Almost always.
I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but even if you know that, if you have that information that there's two consecutive numbers that pop up a lot, there's still so many numbers that you don't know which of those numbers would pop up a lot.
But if you did, you would win.
Yeah.
Every time you buy a quick pick, you get a different set of numbers. Therefore, your odds are always going to be at their worst in that particular game, whatever game you're playing. In this case, the hype, of course, is all about the Powerball. This is according to Richard Lustig, and, you know, take with it what you want. Number two tips for how to be more successful, go beyond the birthdays. The spread is important. If you always choose birth months and dates like most people do, you're relegating yourself to less than half the numbers available, 1 through 31. And that's true because it goes up to 60-something. I do, too. Equally important about including bigger numbers, if you pick your own numbers and only play birthdays and anniversaries, you're splitting the pot with 20 to 40 people. If you spread the numbers out across the whole track, you'll either be the only winner or will split it with only one or two people.
I think there's some validity to that one.
Don't change the numbers. Once you've determined which numbers are good, and in his book, which I remember we had him on and we wanted some tips, and he says, well, you can get the book.
Buy the book first, right.
But don't switch your numbers. And they say that with multiple choice questions when you're taking quizzes in school. Go with your first instinct.
Yeah, but if you're going with your first instinct on a multiple choice question, it's because somewhere in your brain you kind of think you know the answer. With this, the numbers are just random.
Play consistently. That's number four. Never miss a drawing in the game you're playing every Saturday, every Wednesday, every week. That's bad advice for people that don't have a lot of
right,
money.
Right, it is.
And the biggest one, understand the odds, but know your limits. If you play 100 cards, you'll have a better chance than if you play just 10, but only play what you can afford to lose. It's not
agreed.
Like a regular investment. Set a budget of what you're going to spend. Don't get caught up in what's called lottery fever. I got it, man.
You say you have it, but then you also keep saying, I'm going to play one card. You're going to play $2 worth. I'm telling you, watch TV reports or listen to the radio reports where people are spending $300, $400, $500 on tickets. That for a lot of people, that's a whole bunch of money. Could you afford right now to just spend $500 on tickets for this thing?
No, but
wouldn't
I'm spending two.
Two's realistic. Two's fine.
I'm going to open up an ice-cold, frosty beer, and I'm going to look at the numbers at 7 o'clock on Saturday night, and I'm going to relook at them, and I'm going to look at my little sheets, my little ticket about 5 or 20 times, because I'll say, no, I thought this matched. I thought I was the winner.
No. Nope.
Still not giving you any.
And when you lose... If you lose,
oh,
I'll
you're
be more positive.
So negative.
If you've spent $2 when your numbers don't come up, you won't feel that bad. But if you drop $500, that's going to be a long weekend.
Well, that's what people should heed from our advice.
Right.
Do not spend $500. Yeah.
Yeah.
And don't spend more than $2. Bertrand, I'll give you some if I win.
Oh, thank you. Because earlier you talked about giving some to Kevin and to Bill. And
no, Wendy. I never said I'd give it to Bill.
Wendy will not give
no?
me any.
Okay.
No.
Mm-mm.
He's hurtful and hateful about other people winning.
Right.
It's like Ryan Burrow upstairs. I know you talked to him yesterday about how it's kind of folly to play.
Yeah.
Right.
So I want to win just so I can give him $1 million.
See, you're a nice person.
I'll make him beg a little bit. But.
Right. Right. All right. A quick break. We'll find out what Steve has coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Kim, be honest. What did you think of Wendy and my crosstalk with Steve Bertrand, the second one, the one we just did a few minutes ago? Was it pretty good, do you think?
I honestly wasn't paying attention.
That's
I was
right.
working up here.
That's
She's
no,
busy.
Kim's
El
very
Chapo's
busy.
Been...
Oh, he's been nabbed.
Nabbed. After
what was the headline
the
that
run?
We said off the air here?
El Chapo, El Cotto. That's what we're saying. Did you know El Chapo in Spanish means the Chapo? Did you know that?
No, I figured it was like chap or something.
No,
Kevin says it means the small, but
well,
that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, small.
Chapo, I guess, is like an adjective for small. So I don't know exactly how that would work. The
but
translation.
But a drug kingpin, if his nickname was the small, that's like derogative. That I wouldn't take that as my nickname.
No way.
El Chapo sounds like this guy will just give you a chop. Don't get in his way.
Yeah, but the small, it's like what do we here in America call him? Hey, tiny.
Yeah. That doesn't
That's
have
not
any kind
shorty.
Of, right. Does that make you scared of El Chapo? No.
No.
They caught him finally, though.
How long has he been missing?
7 months.
Seven months.
That's nothing. I thought he'd be gone longer.
Can I give some advice to the good people of Mexico? This time, try putting him someplace that doesn't have tunnels underneath it and see what happens.
Probably a good idea.
Yeah.
And apparently there was a big shootout with Mexican Marines at the place where he was captured.
I didn't think they'd get him again. I thought they'd put him somewhere where no one would find him this time. Because he like every time they catch him, he breaks out, right? Doesn't he do that all the time?
Yeah, and he, you know, apparently has a lot of money, and
yep.
he's got a lot of armed people surrounding him, so
yep.
can't keep a little man down.
That's so true.
It's true. Have never been spoken.
No, those are the truest words we can say about El Chapo. We're going to have him on. Kevin, did you get El Chapo for this?
Working on it. Working I'm in touch Chapo with his people.
For later on in the show.
So Grande is big, Chapo is small. I'm just trying to remember the Taco Bell menu.
Small was pequeño.
Pequeño means
yeah,
small.
See, yeah, see, you're wrong, Kevin.
No, I'm looking right now. Chapo, adjective, small in stature, Mexico.
Maybe that's, you know, that's kind of like...
Guys, I took 4 years of Spanish in high school, and like two of them were honors, so all right. I don't know. Okay. My English.
Really?
Did you pass the AP test?
Well, no, but...
What were you going to say? It's like him.
You were, you know, like a nickname kind of a thing.
But it sounds like if you were him, wouldn't you vote that nickname down?
Well, you would
think. Because it sounds like, hey, I need more respect. I'm El Chapo. It doesn't sound respectful. Not that he deserves respect, but he was the top kingpin in Mexican drugs for 20 years.
Uno más. That means one more.
One more.
I'm telling you, all the Spanish I learn is from the Taco Bell menu. If it's grande, I know it means large. Taco Bell grande.
Right.
I took French.
Yo quiero Taco Bell.
Yes.
Where is the Taco Bell?
Donde esta la Taco Bell?
Yo quiero is I want Taco Bell.
I want Taco Bell.
See, I took French. Sorry, whatever. Taco Bell plans to run a 30-second Super Bowl commercial unveiling what could be the biggest food creation yet. According to a press release.
Biggest food creation for Taco Bell.
I just drooled on my microphone. Sorry.
Oh,
I love
right.
Taco Bell.
But
I have
when
the
they,
app.
February 20th.
So when they...
That was Dolly.
When they say the biggest food creation yet, they mean in terms of their own food of Taco Bell, not the biggest food creation in the history of food.
Well, no. Who would care? This is just... I'm sorry, but Taco Bell rocks. I got the app over the holiday break.
Mm-hmm.
Put it on the iPad.
What does the app afford you? What do you get?
I got
get...
$2 off. And when, you know, we overload because we get a 12-pack of tacos. There are four of us, three boys. I guess three men now, technically. That's
you
where all my problems
that.
Started.
Right.
When so, Dylan turned into a teenager, I used to have a husband and two cute little boys.
And now?
I have three men.
Yeah.
I hate it there.
Yep.
Can I work more hours here?
Well, because the world belongs to them, right? I mean, when you're and I have the opposite at my house.
There's
three women at my house.
Yeah, but your house is cleaner.
Plus, my wife and
of...
daughters. If they ever find my secret room,
what
boy,
are you,
am
El
I
Jerko?
In trouble? I don't know. I'm going to pretend I don't know what you mean by that.
Well, if you have three women in addition to
right.
your, I just never
right.
But it's like three men all of a sudden. So you're right. But here's
three men and a little lady.
No, who?
Well,
I'm not. No, who do they have there right
I don't
now?
Know.
But
I don't know.
Men are dirtier.
Boy, aren't they? They
you
are.
Have three women, so your house is cleaner than mine.
I'm a guy. I could not survive in a house with three other guys.
I'm
There's no way
you.
In the world.
And all of a sudden, I turned around and they're men. And so when we go to Taco Bell, it's like men eat more than my little boys.
Sure.
So we get a 12er of the tacos, half crunchy, half soft.
A pitcher of pop.
No, but they do have a good Baja Blast Freeze that's really good.
That's a Mountain Dew with like a berry flavor to it.
Yeah,
is that what that
but
is?
It's like a Slurpee version of it.
Oh, yeah, I've seen those.
And then Dylan's into the cheesy chicken gordita crunches.
Yeah.
I like the beef burrito supreme, no beans. Michael goes for a beef chalupa. And Jim's all about a Mexican pizza. So all that stuff starts adding up, plus the 12 tacos.
What does it cost you at Taco Bell? It's like 50
bucks? I can't even tell you because I am so 100% embarrassed, even with the app where I saved $2. Now, granted, we went a little extra because somebody, Jim wanted the steak quesadillas. Michael wanted to try the smothered burrito.
Right.
This isn't
that
our typical
good.
Order. We saved $2 on the app, and I... Bill spent $43.
Will you do me a favor? Try the
Did
new...
Did you hear me? I just confessed.
$43 at Taco Bell.
I know, isn't it hideous?
That seems like a whole lot of money. Try the new Taco Bell El Chapo special. It's an enchilada, but you can't find it for 7 months.
At least you get your money's worth.
Right. Eventually, you get your money's
weird?
Worth.
We what? Just saw a video of him walking back up into his cell out of the tunnel.
He did?
Yeah.
Why don't they learn, Steve? You got to
keep
tunnels. There should be no tunnels near him anywhere.
Kind of a self-reporting thing.
All right. Well, this is big Taco Bell news. This is the, quote, its biggest food creation yet.
Mm-hmm.
During a 30-second Super Bowl commercial, they issued a press release yesterday. Taco Bell isn't providing any clues as to what consumers might expect from the new menu item. It seems likely that the product will be indulgent to tempt viewers already chowing down on greasy Super Bowl fare. Here's a speculative guess. According to YahooFood.com.
Mm-hmm.
This is just
a speculative guess. This is not definite. This is just them guessing.
Yes. The Naked Crispy Chicken Taco launched last September, but only in a few select California locations.
So this would go national and change the world of food as we know it.
What is the Naked Crispy Chicken Taco?
What is it?
It only existed in a handful of test markets, so it does seem that this might be it.
Sure. They tried it out.
The shell, as you can probably guess, is breaded white meat. Oh, the...
What?
The Naked Crispy Chicken Taco. It's not naked in the way of not breaded, because it looks like there's breaded white meat chicken that is the actual shell.
It's served to you from someone who is naked. Is that what they're doing
that
now?
That costs way extra, and you can't order it on the app. The fillings are lettuce, tomato, shredded cheddar, and avocado ranch sauce. But, Bill, if you look see what I'm saying, it's like a pounded chicken breast breaded. There is no shell. That's the shell. So for people who are chicken, on carbs...
The chicken itself is the
holding it all together.
Taco part, right? Is that what you're mm-hmm. saying? Yeah.
Oh, my God, that looks really good. It all begs the question, what took Taco Bell so long?
That's what I was going to ask.
Well, KFC had all those crazy... Didn't you like something? What's Double Down?
The Chicken Little. KFC had the Chicken Littles, and when they first came out, they were the best thing in the world. They were like White Castles, but with chicken. But then they revamped them. They took them away, they revamped them, and they were just not good at all. I don't know what they changed. They just made them bad.
And what's a Double Down, Kevin?
That was the thing they released a few years ago. It was like the sandwich with bacon in the middle and cheese, but the bread
Chicken patties whatever. See, that's just, you know what that should be called? Please, God, just give me a heart
Delicious.
Attack.
El Gordo. The Taco Bell
They have
El
a gordita.
Gordo. Oh, they do, don't
I mean,
they?
I'm
they use
you,
that word.
That's why I didn't know what El Chapo was, because it wasn't on the menu, but you said it is now. What is the El Chapo?
The El Chapo special is an enchilada, but you can't find it for 7 months.
But when it surfaces.
Oh, is it good?
Pow!
It's so good. A quick break. More show ahead. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
This week on Chicago's Best, grab a cold one and join Brittany and Elliot on a sudsy search for the best beer-infused foods. Chicago's Best, Sunday night at 10 on WGN-TV. Sorry I was excited about the big press release that Taco Bell was going to put a Super Bowl commercial together. Mm-hmm. This is about the time you got to start thinking Super Bowl, right?
It's coming up soon. The playoffs start this weekend. It's wild card weekend, so we'll get the playoff games done. And then the Super Bowl itself in early February. Now, they've announced, we already knew that Coldplay was going to be the major attraction for halftime.
Boring.
You don't like Coldplay? Not a fan?
They're fantastic. Chris Martin, is that his name?
Chris Martin is the lead singer,
He's
yeah.
got a great voice, very talented, but this is boring.
Does this juice it up a little bit for you? In addition to Coldplay, they have added Beyonce to the bill. Not even Beyonce.
Didn't she already do it?
I don't think so.
I do.
Has she? Mm-hmm. Beyonce was
I'm being told yes, she did.
She did? I don't remember that.
Been there, done that. She's gorgeous. Love it. Didn't she get together with, wasn't she in a band with her?
Destiny's Child.
Yes.
Yeah, they reunited
See?
For the Super Bowl.
I remember
did it.
That.
Right.
So I've been there, done that. Give me something new.
See, the problem is, and we've discussed this once or twice, there's nobody that appeals to everybody for the halftime show. You can't name anybody. If it's a classic performer, if it's Bruce Springsteen or the Rolling Stones or Paul McCartney, then our kids will go, who's the old guy in the middle of the football field? They won't understand it. If they go with somebody newer, then people who have been fans of football or music will go, these kids with the loud music, I don't understand what they're trying to say.
Three words for you. Belle Biv DeVoe.
Belle Biv DeVoe is really the only band they could get that would appeal to everybody.
Did Springsteen already do it?
Yeah.
What about the Eagles?
I know the Who did it with Destiny's Child. He reunited with Destiny's Child.
I'll never forget that.
Wasn't that amazing? Right.
The Eagles.
Yeah.
Oh,
why
yeah,
not?
They're rocking. They're like Coldplay.
There's
Are
no.
Are you kidding me?
There's nobody.
Neil Young.
Neil Young doesn't appeal to
there you
everybody.
Go. That'll pep
I don't
it
think
up.
He would do it.
He wouldn't. And boy, he looks, I'm telling you, when I was in grade school and we used to carve an apple and you put it in the oven and cook it up, and you know what I'm talking about. And then you put hair, it looks just like Neil Young.
It does look like Neil
Young. Well, let's tell him, that'll get him to do it.
He's too cranky to do it. They would ask him to do it and he'd go, I'm in the middle of a football game. He's always cranky.
What was the name? Now, I had it in my head and I've lost it. The Fox show that started all this, because they did the, you know, the Wayans Brothers show.
Oh, in Living Color?
Living Color.
Yeah.
The Fly Girls? That's who you want?
Well, remember, they kind of started by doing a live halftime show
on
Fox.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
yeah. Opposite the real live halftime show.
That's true.
So why don't they
get the Wayans Brothers.
Come back and do a little skit. I'm tired of these.
Remind me,
overly
Steve,
produced shows.
They did it when Fox didn't have the Super Bowl.
Right.
The Fox network said, hey, if you're looking for an alternative to their lame halftime show, come watch us.
Right. If you're done with Up With People, tune into Fox during the halftime. And they timed it to where they just broke into regular programming and did a live in Living Color.
I do remember that. That's not a bad idea.
That is good. Someone's suggesting Neil Diamond. What, to sing Sweet Caroline and get off the stage? Ba, ba, ba.
I like Neil Diamond.
Not going to do it.
He doesn't. There's nobody in the world of music that appeals to everybody. I don't think ZZ Top appeals to everybody.
No, I can't stand ZZ Top.
I don't think so.
The old stuff or the new stuff or all stuff?
They have new stuff?
Well, see, now I liked their album.
From the 80s?
No,
it's been a while since they've really put out anything of any importance.
Nothing's important. I just like their blues rock that they did.
Sure.
DeGuayo and Trace Ombres. That was good. Heard it on the X. LaGrange. How. I didn't like the TV dinners. That was
watered
lame.
Watered down a little bit.
You know what? Put fur on something else other than your guitar.
Actually, the guys from that militia kind of look like ZZ Top. They could just get those new militia guys to come out and do a song.
What song are they going to do? Bang, bang, you shot me down.
Maybe. I don't know.
But Barry Manilow could do a montage of
Barry Manilow's
commercial
very
jingles we've heard on past Super Bowls.
This 847 has the best idea in all the land.
Who? Who do they say?
Seriously? And if the powers that be at the Super Bowl, because the artists have to pay Super Bowl.
No, that didn't go through. They wanted the artists to have to pay for that, but that got voted down.
But they don't get paid for it.
They make such a low amount of money.
$20.
It's like not being paid. No, it's a couple of $100. It's ridiculous. It's like the minimum that you could get for a TV appearance. It's like not being paid.
All right, tell me this is not a great idea. Every time, I don't know how to set this up, so I'm just going to read it. 847 says, put all the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nominees on stage together for a Super Bowl halftime.
That's a great idea.
And this is why it's a great idea. Because a lot of times when people are nominated, everyone goes, oh my God, why are they in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Right.
But this will encompass everyone's interest.
That's a very good idea.
I love it.
The only one that it is a strong idea. The only person that I thought about that you could possibly say, there's two people. Adele would come pretty close to appealing. That wouldn't impress you if Adele got the nod.
Let her
do this.
Sing a song with Coldplay. I mean, that's all the same thing. Lovely to hear you, but really, I want to be amped up.
Not a whole show. And what about Taylor Swift? Would that do anything
for
you?
She's already done it.
I don't think so. Did she?
Taylor Swift, Kevin?
Did Taylor Swift do it?
Well, then why isn't she?
That would seem to be right now, that would be the one person that I would think would appeal to older people and younger people at the same time.
Mostly the old men.
Possibly.
God, she's a cutie.
Yep, you might get a little bit of that.
I think Dave has the best answer of all time. Dave, don't you know of one person that would appeal to everyone, young, old, and in between?
Definitely. Weird Al Yankovic, especially with the accordion, the really true rock and roll instrument. And if he did any of it from the Food album, it would be like, you know, without food, none of us would be here. So why not have, you know, Weird Al Yankovic?
I want to disagree, but I can't.
It's too
strong of an idea.
I like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nominees.
If you did the Hot Rock Polka from the soundtrack from UHF and other stuff, which is a Stones medley.
I don't like Weird Al Yankovic.
Oh, you don't, Steve?
He could be the perfect choice. I mean,
too
it
bad
would be
Frankie Yankovic wasn't around because we could
funny
get
thing.
Yankovic and Yankovic.
Working together? It really is a good idea. It really is.
I know, Dave. I'm telling you, they're gonna steal your idea. They're gonna hear it here and take it.
Well, it's such a universal idea. How can it not be just something that would be public domain, anyways?
Right. Agreed.
Well, you're a genius,
thanks, Dave.
Thank you.
Good
Weird
idea.
Al for president.
All right. Now, quickly, who did it last year? That's what I mean. I know who did it last year, but it's one of those things. This always happens with the Academy Awards. You get all that hype, and then people go, quick, the winner last year.
Kevin, you can guess on the air, because I don't want to be stealing your ideas, but Bruno Mars did it.
He did it twice now.
I know. So it,
but it was Katy Perry last year.
Katy Perry was.
That was last year? Yeah. That seemed like 5 years ago. Is this the shark that looked left or something?
Yeah, there was a... Right, that was correct. There was a shark.
What did he do again?
I don't remember exactly.
What's the shark?
It was like left shark, and I think he just wasn't in sync with the performance or something.
Do you see how quickly we forget?
Yes. I know. That's how disposable all this is. But every year they announce who's going to be on it, and everybody goes, oh, don't have them on, whoever it is.
Coldplay, that's how I feel.
I like Coldplay. You don't like Coldplay
at all?
It's
not the proper gig for them.
It's not. There's not enough, like, just energy to Coldplay. Right. They're a little more laid back. They are.
It's not... But it's not for, like, the people there. It's, you know, it's for the viewer, not as much as it is for the person attending the game, in my opinion.
Right, oh, without a doubt.
But the viewer is, you know, eating dips and drinking beers, right, and they want something rowdy.
Bathroom right. break, for me.
What about Psy? Would you like to see Psy do it?
Yes.
Kevin, high five me on that one.
We have a winner. All right, it'll be Psy. We'll get Psy in there. I don't even
Gangnam
remember.
Style. Gang,
yeah, that Gangnam Style song.
How does it go?
But everybody would be watching it. They'd go, is this a rerun of Super Bowl from 5 years ago? Why is he on it?
Yeah, but they're going to say...
Why not? The Patriots will be on it.
Right, that's true.
And Beyonce's going to be on again.
Right. So it'll
this
look
time
like
without Destiny's Child.
You got to call and tell them, by the way, they're not invited. They're not going to be happy. Steve has the news in just a minute, and then we have a lot more show for you. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, live on 720. We are from the Allstate Showcase Studio on a very rainy day, and there's a couple embracing right out there, two young kids.
People
in
are
love.
In love, Wendy. That's what happens.
I'm in love with my family, although moments ago I was just complaining that I have a husband and used to have a husband and two kids at home.
Right.
Two boys, and now I have three men, and we spend nearly $50 when we go to Taco Bell, and life has changed completely.
Mm-hmm.
Found this on the internet, and things I want my teenage sons to know, and I'm telling you, I was touched, I laughed, and now we are talking to Lisa Heffernan, the author of this. How are you, Lisa?
Fine, thank you, Wendy. Thank you very much.
Now, you're a New York Times bestselling author. You're a mom, a wife, a friend. And I was checking out the website that you have co-founded called Grown and Flown. And I was explaining to Bill, your kids have grown and they've flown. They've left the nest. And Bill, this is right where you are
right
now.
That's where I am exactly right now. Both my girls are either at college or looking at a college for next year. So it's a tough transition, isn't it?
It's a huge transition in life. And, you know, what we found was there are a lot of parenting sites about the sort of 0 to 12 or 0 to 13 kind of age range and very little about the high school and college years, which, as both of you know, as you're there, are some of the toughest years in parenting.
Yeah.
It is so hard. And honestly, I try so hard to be a good mom. And when I think about it, I might not be that great. But we do what we know how to do. We learn with our kids. And I think it's okay to sometimes admit you made a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. I mean, you want to make mistake-making okay for them. That's the only way young adults really, really learn. They've got to make some small mistakes along the way to get their feet. And so we really need to admit that we do the same. And if we're not showing them our mistakes right now, it's important sometimes that we tell them about mistakes we made when we were young, when we were in our teens or 20s, so that they know that we weren't those perfect young people either.
So 58 things I want my teenage sons to know. I read this. Like I said, I laughed. I was touched. These are so accurate. In no particular order, correct?
No particular order. No, though. The first one I think may be the most important, about teaching our kids the importance of being a good friend. And that being a lifelong friend and loyalty. These were lessons that kind of life lessons that you need to teach older kids, maybe that you can't really teach, you know, 12-year-olds or 13-year-olds, the kinds of things you really need to know to send your kids off into the world.
You are letting them go, and Bill, I don't know how you did that.
It's not easy. It is not.
I have a junior in high school, so he's not ready to leave just yet, but soon enough, and a 13-year-old who's in 7th grade. And having good friends is a blessing. Being a good friend is obligatory. That is number one. And number two really hits home with me. Females have a better sense of smell. Need I say more? It is so hard to get the 13-year-old in the shower. My older son kind of went through this phase too. What is it? Do boys think they're going to melt when they get in the shower?
I think they just don't realize how bad they smell, frankly. I'm a mom of three boys also, and I used to have these fights where I literally held the door closed and said, you can't come out. You may not come out of that bathroom. You know, and they get strong and they're pulling the other side of it. And the only thing I found that, you know, that it made an impact was to say, you know, girls don't like that. Girls really don't like that bad smell. And off they went in the shower.
And see, at 13, it's not really hitting Dylan yet.
It
although
will.
He does talk about cute girls in his class and stuff, but it hasn't hit. Yeah. And then now Michael takes a shower every day, you know, my high schooler. So that just kind of, that happened on his own.
Right.
And at some point, Lisa, you know, being a mom, it's like, I guess what I'm worried about is, like, if a teacher smells him, I will feel really bad. But at some point, don't you have to let go and kind of let them learn on their own?
You do. You do. And these are all suggestions, because they do have to make their own way, as we're talking about, make their own mistakes. But, you know, there's still a lot of parenting that goes on, even well into the college years. This is a generation who, for better or for worse, and I think for better, are extremely attached to their parents. And they remain that way into their 30s, from what we've seen, the way millennials behave. You know, there's a lot of criticism about it, but there's certainly a lot of benefits about having that close family tie.
Lisa, when you share your wisdom with your sons, do you get a little bit of an eye roll when you throw out some knowledge that you've been able to pick up over the years, or do they just respect you and go, oh, yeah, well, you've been on the planet longer than me. You must know your way around.
Their eyes roll all the way back.
They do.
Yeah. I'm looking at the whites. There's nothing left. No, I get the big eye roll. But what research tells us is you get the eye roll, you get the turn of the head, you get that disrespectful look that just makes you see red, right, as a parent? They're listening to us. They hear it. They know what we've said. They respect what we say. They just don't want to be told. But all the research that psychologists do into, you know, into those later years, into those college years and young adult years, shows that our words stick. They know what we're saying, and we need to keep saying it.
Something that I have to relate to, and really, we've got Lisa Heffernan on the line with us. She's one of the co-founders of Grown and Flown. It's a website you can hit, and you're a New York Times bestselling author, and you wrote this piece, 58 Things I Want My Teenage Sons to Know, and we'll put a link up at our page. But I think the fact that I am a woman with, you know, boys at home, I mean, this really hit home for me. And when I noticed about my high schooler who was taking showers, yeah, he takes them every morning, but he's late for his first period almost every day. My husband and I are constantly going, come on, come on. And at one point, Lisa, I just said, you know, you're thinking about going away to college. You're looking about going to Tennessee. And Dad and I don't feel it's a really good investment if we're paying for you to go to college and we're worried you're not going to make it to class on time. And lo and behold, Lisa, it like all of a sudden rang a bell in his head. It's like I wasn't bitching at him. I was saying something he could relate to.
Yeah, you know, it's Wendy. It's interesting you say that, because I've just written a piece that I haven't put up on our site yet about college readiness. And I interviewed a bunch of psychologists, and one of the psychologists said to me, there's nothing wrong with your kid making mistakes and stumbling and not, you know, getting with the program completely in 11th and 12th grade. But when you threaten and say, I don't think you're ready for college and you need to show me you're ready, and their behavior changes, that's one sign that they're really ready. Because it's so important to them that they're ready to change their behavior. So that should have actually been very heartening to you. Not that he wasn't getting up and managing his time well before, but that once he heard that how important it was and that it might impact college, that he was willing to change. One of the psychologists at one of the colleges I spoke to said it's a real red flag if you threaten that this is going to keep you home and they don't change their behavior.
That's interesting.
It is.
So your son has done exactly what you might hope.
Lisa, what about this? They always say, psychologists, learned people say, don't bombard your teenagers with questions. Where are you going? What'd you do? What do you have planned? But in any conversation you have with anybody, you're going to ask a bunch of questions. You're not specifically making questions just because it's a teenager. Where do you stand on that?
I spread it out. So some of my questions I express verbally. Some of them I text to them because I find they're much more interested sometimes in answering me by text, you know, say they're at a friend's house or something like that. And I just try and deal in the information I must have. I must know where you are. I must know when you're coming home. I must know who you're with. I must know if the parents are home. And I try and stick to the questions that I have to have the information to. And then, you know, as everyone will tell you, and I'm sure you found from your experience, the best way to get kids to talk, particularly boys.
Waterboarding.
You know, I haven't used that yet. Is the car. Is
the car. Yeah.
When they were little, it got them to go to sleep. And when they're older, it gets them to talk. So, you know, you get in the car, you make sure you get a couple of those trips where there aren't siblings in the car, and you're both staring ahead, and you let a few questions out slowly.
That's smart.
That is really smart. Yeah. And I do find that, you know, we're all busy. Everybody has something to do. Yep. And when you're in the car going somewhere, it's a really great time to have a conversation.
Sure.
Even if you just make the excuse, you know, run to the grocery store with me, or, you know, I got to return something, jump in the car with me. It won't take you long. Just come with me for a few minutes.
Yep.
And it's particularly grabbing, you both have families with multiple children. Many, many of us have families with multiple children. It's pulling that one sibling away from the other, so the conversation is just between the parent and the one child. And that makes it a little easier for the kid to talk.
That's a smart move, too.
How are you on time? Can you hang on? We'll take a quick break, and we can discuss some of these things. 58 things I want my teenage sons to know. First of all, we do not have time to go through all 58 of them from Lisa Heffernan, but you're definitely going to want to check this out online. It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. Things I want my teenage sons to know. We're discussing that right now with author Lisa Heffernan. Now, you were a trader or something. What did you do before this great parental thing you're doing now?
Oh, thanks. I was a Wall Street trader, yeah. I was a currency trader, actually, in New York. And then I wrote some books about business. I'm a business author. And then when my kids became sort of in the teenage years and I was looking around for some guidance, I found that there was very little online. And so I started Grown and Flown.
And I am going to check out your website all the time. You can subscribe. You can share links. It's about going to college. Bill, I pointed out something there. Should you help your kids fill out their college applications? These are all very useful things as our kids grow up. I did that MyPillow commercial about getting enough sleep. And one of the things on the thing, 58 things I want my teenage sons to know, sleep will not solve all of your problems, but not sleeping will create new ones.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, the kids, you know, our kids really underestimate. They've got so much energy. They've got so much enthusiasm. The world is available to them 24 hours a day through their electronic devices. They really forget how quickly lack of sleep will break down everything in their lives. It will break down their social lives. It will break down their schoolwork. It will break down any athletic aspirations they have. And honestly, they get sick. I mean, this is why freshmen are sick so often. There are two reasons why freshmen get sick so often in college. One is they're living in this germ infested environment with each other, you know, living in such close quarters, but the others, they don't sleep. And none of those are outcomes that kids want, but they don't really put the two things together. They, you know, they call mom and dad and say, you know, I'm sick, I've got strep, I've got mono, I've got a cold. And then you say, are you sleeping? And they don't really put those two things together. So parental advice, they need to sleep.
Lisa, here's one of my favorites. And boy, is this true. If your friends are jerks, you will not be far behind. Choose wisely. At some point, our kids have a friend. They'll somehow get a friend, and you kind of look sideways and go, I don't think that's in your best interest. But if you say that to your child, that'll make them fight the opposite way sometimes.
It does. And in high school, you know, you've got the kids at home, and it's important to just sort of keep an eye on that, that this isn't a friend that's leading your child into some sort of, you know, real danger zones with, you know, with drugs or drunk driving or drinking or any sorts of things like that. In college, we don't have that anymore. We no longer know their friends. So it's important to impress upon them, you know, you will be what your friends are. The research shows that, you know, in every aspect of life, whether it's weight gain or behavior patterns, you know, we fit in with our peers. And so choose your peers wisely. If your peers are that group in college who's just teetering on the edge of failing out, well, is that really a good place to be? So before they leave for college, they need to learn that message. While they're still home, you can kind of keep an eye on
it.
I like this one. Covering your tracks uncovers a faulty character. Real men own up to their mistakes, apologize, and try to put things right. Great advice.
Yeah. Hiding from your mistakes is not, that's not a glorious behavior pattern. And, you know, teens try and do that. It's the impulse. You know, they've done something wrong, and they just want to cover their tracks. And it's our job to teach them, you know what, you do something wrong, you own up to it. And the outcome will be better.
Lisa, do you ever convey this to your kids? I know you mentioned you had three boys. Do you ever mention the fact that you had never been a parent until they showed up, so it's kind of new territory for you. I've said that to my daughters many times, is that I'm not as new at this as I once was. They're 19 years old now, but yeah. it's my first time, you know.
I haven't, but somebody recently said something to me that really stuck with me, and it's to your point. All parents are amateurs.
Yeah.
Right, we're all amateurs.
Right.
There are no professional parents.
Right.
Maybe by your, you know, 10th kid, you become a professional. But I haven't. But that's a very, you know, circle around to where we started. It's a very important point to make to them, that you're as faulty as they are.
Yeah.
And when we do things wrong, which we do, I mean, you know, I'll own up to it. I have lost my temper crazy at my kids. I've screamed. I've, you know, made a mountain out of a molehill. It's really important to go in and say, look, I was having a really bad day, and I had no right taking this out on you. And, you know, kind of own up to that. Because that sets the what we were just talking about, that kind of sets the pattern for them to own up to their mistakes.
Well, I think it appreciates them, the fact that you're acknowledging it. I don't remember either of my parents ever saying to me, I really did it this way and I should have done it that way. But I can't tell you how many times I've done it with my kids.
But
I've done it so many times.
Things have changed. Our parents never wanted to show weakness.
Yeah.
And you know, it's funny because everybody says, oh, no one respects their parents anymore.
Right.
Respect is there. Trust me. They really want to do what they think we'd approve of. But it's just we have different relationships now with our kids than we did with our parents.
Yeah.
Yes. And they do respect us. You're absolutely right, Wendy. We're just closer to them. It's just it's a different dynamic, and to my mind, a better dynamic. But it is just different.
And I really dislike when people say, "Don't try to be your kids' friends. You need to be their parent." Well, you can be. I don't say I'm trying to be their friends, but again, getting back to that relationship. I have questions that I get lobbed to me from my 13-year-old about sex, and I will kind of just answer them in a matter-of-fact kind of way. I might smile, but I don't ask embarrassed. I don't offer way too much information because he's only 13. And then I say, you know what, if you have any other questions, come back and ask me. And we treat it very lightly, but you know what, Lisa, he keeps coming back and asks me questions. So I've opened up the communication there.
Which means if he keeps coming back, that means you've done it absolutely right. You know, when kids get shut down, they don't come back. When they know that door is open, and what you touched on there is really important. It's giving them just the amount of information that they need. So, you know, your 17-year-old needs a lot more information than your 13-year-old.
Right.
And it's always a little hard to know. You're always kind of tiptoeing a little bit about where that line is. But, you know, we make those judgments as we make other judgments, and that's what's really important.
What I do need to read to my 13-year-old is number 4. Do not photograph your private parts. The picture will end up in your grandmother's Facebook feed, and I promise you, you do not want to go there.
Well, you know, we're the first generation of parents who've really had to parent with social media, and it's hard to know. And so I just went for the scare factor. Look, you know, anything you don't want your grandmother to see, don't put out there, okay? If you think that only your friends are going to see it, you are wrong. I use grandmother as the bar that they have to hurdle if you don't want your grandmother to see it. A lot of parents talk about, you know, future employers, future admissions officers. Admissions officers are absolutely looking at their social media.
Oh, yeah.
Employers, when they go for summer jobs, are absolutely looking at their social media. So I used their grandmother, but those other two work well as well.
All right, I have an interesting text that I want to ask your opinion. Lisa Heffernan on the line with us, and you're pretty good at this parenting thing. Someone just says, really enjoy listening to you guys talk about this. I'm curious, Wendy, you're mentioning all these things about your 13-year-old son. Isn't there a possibility that the girls he talks about, their parents may hear what you're saying and pass it along to those girls? Have I said anything that really should...
I don't think anything's bad. No, I think you're all right.
I mean, you know, they've learned to say not for air.
Yeah.
If there are things I mentioned. But we're all kind of in the same boat, and I guess that's what bothers me sometimes when people think their lives are perfect, because you never know what's going on in someone else's house.
No, and one of the things we found both on the Grown Up Flynn website and we've got a Facebook group is that parents really need to hear from other parents. They really need to hear the experiences of other parents, and that's how they learn. As to your point earlier, you know, we're all amateurs.
Yeah.
Lisa, thanks so much. What are you working on now? You got something coming up that we should know about?
No, just Growing the website, it's we're working on it all the time. It's we've got a lot of guest contributors. We've got a very large audience now, so we just continue to grow it.
Good.
I love that you're doing it. Grownandflown.com. And listeners, we already put a link up on our Facebook page, Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder, 58 Things I Want My Teenage Sons to Know. Good luck to you. I hope to talk to you in the future about
this
whole parental thing, because we are just faking it until we do it.
Until we break
it. Exactly. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Lisa. Take care. Have a good weekend. All right. Very helpful. Good stuff from her.
Yeah, I think we'll be talking to her again, because I'm telling you, this whole parenting thing, I don't know what the heck
I'm
doing.
I know. No one does. Quick break, some news, and then more show ahead. Bill and Wendy, WGN. This song is making Lana Del Rey sad. That's how sad this music is.
All right, there is a show, a Netflix exclusive, that the whole world has been talking about. I got a new iPad for Christmas, so I, you know, logged into my Netflix account. Right away, it pops up, Making of a Murderer. We have been, all of us have been talking about watching it, and we said, let's watch it last night
we
so we could talk
about it.
We all
watched it separately last night.
Just the first episode.
Kevin's on Kevin just finished his second episode. There's 10.
I am binge watching, I'm telling you, when I get home.
You're watching all this weekend?
Oh, yeah. I got a Hawks game. But I am going to watch it this weekend. It is, I am, I'm drawn to it.
For people who have not seen it yet, it is the hottest show on television, and it's very curious because Netflix does these shows from time to time. This one in particular, it's 10 episodes. It's a documentary, a 10-hour, essentially, documentary that is split up into episodes. And I'm trying to figure out, it's good, don't get me wrong. I'm only an episode in, but it does grab you from the very beginning. Takes place in Wisconsin. It's about a guy who's framed for a crime. I don't want to give too much away.
As we are led to believe, because now there's speculation that he did do it and he wasn't framed.
Right.
That's coming out now.
Right.
Over 10 years in the making, two filmmakers documented the making of a murderer. That music you heard, which you said would make Lana Del Rey cry.
Yep.
The opening shots to show Manitowoc, Wisconsin, and that music, it just nails what it's trying to do.
Right off the bat, as you watch the opening credits, it shows you small town America, which Manitowoc, Wisconsin is, but you can tell the town has a secret. It's just shot in a certain way where it's a car that's been abandoned and there's weeds growing through it, and it's an old barn that's kind of ramshackled. Like, as you're looking at it, you're going, I'm in for a sad story, I believe. And you are. This is a sad story.
And the Avery family is, to me, a sad tale of woe.
Yeah.
They have a lot of problems, but what a close-knit family. They love each other. They support each other. There are some cousins that are suspect in this.
Yeah.
It's just wild. There's a whole era of real-life whodunit series. The podcast Serial first attracted legions of listeners on whether or not a young man should have been put in prison for the murder of his former high school girlfriend. HBO's documentary, The Jinx, focused on a trail of murdered and missing intimates of a troubled scion of a wealthy family. And now this making a murderer, a man named Stephen Avery, in 2003, after 18 years in prison, DNA evidence proved that Avery did not commit the brutal sexual assault that he'd been accused of. He was freed, and it appeared that a long injustice had finally come to an end.
Yeah.
It is amazing. I love the family junkyard.
It's right. It's where
Victory Auto Records got nothing on the Avery family.
It's a very vast graveyard for cars that have seen better days, and that family's in charge of it. And they live amidst a farming community. Everybody else in town are farmers,
dairy
of one
farms,
way or another.
Crops,
right? So they're kind of looked down upon by all these farmers. And
but
it really,
you know, they made it though. They made it. This family made it. It's like,
right.
It's terrible that they were just kind of targeted.
Well, I think, because as I was watching this yesterday, I was trying to in my head formulate why this has become so popular so fast. And all I could think of is everybody kind of knows the people that you're watching in this documentary. You know a version of these people where life has dealt them a sort of an unfortunate hand of cards. and they're doing their best to kind of exist despite the fact that they're kind of starting in something of a hole. They live in a town where they're just not really appreciated or liked very much by those around them. Don't you know a couple of people like that? I do.
Not to that extreme.
Maybe not to that extreme.
Not to that extreme where you're just looking for ways to make their lives miserable.
Right.
The two filmmakers who did this, Moira Demos and Laura Riccardi, they spent 10 years making this 10-part series.
What dedication, by the way. Really?
And it's shot beautifully.
Yeah, it does look good.
They came to know Avery and his world in rural Manitowoc County, Wisconsin. I do notice the way people talk there is a little different.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't nail it, but it is, you know, you hear people making, well, we do. We make fun of people from Wisconsin, and I.
And they make fun of us.
Oh, they
just
do.
So you know, okay. Yeah.
But they are, it's just a real interesting thing. And one of the people said, he grew up working on his family's salvage yard, which is honestly, they show these giant farms of cows and crops, and this is a giant farm of cars.
Right. Right.
It just looked wild from the aerial view.
Yeah.
He didn't graduate from high school. They were kind of the bad folk from the wrong side of the tracks.
Right.
As a teenager, Avery made a series of bad choices. For example, burglarizing a local tavern with his friends. Demo says, this is one of the filmmakers, these are felonies, but when you look at the actual report, it's about breaking into a tavern, making a cheese sandwich, and they stole some beer. I mean, really,
he
is
also
that...
had a nasty episode with a cat.
That was bothersome
know,
to me.
Yeah. There. Even, the, you know, that's one of the other things that I noticed, and I'm only an hour into it like you are. Kevin's a little further, and I know other people that have seen all 10 episodes. You start to like the guy, and then you hear something that he's done that's awful, and then you start to not like the guy, and then he says something, and you go, oh, man, I kind of like this guy. You go back and forth and back and forth on him, don't you?
Yeah,
like
I
kept thinking, even if he's not guilty of this, you got the feeling at some point he would do something a little bit more wrong, and he
but
might
not
have,
sexually.
Right,
I mean, this was right. A terrible. This woman was jogging, and she was sexually attacked and brutally beaten.
A prominent citizen of the area.
They owned, a sweet shop or something?
A couple things, I think. Yeah, she and her husband did a lot with the local. She was, I think they described her yesterday as like a model citizen in the town, and then something happened that they believed to be from the exact opposite type of person in the town. It really is. I mean, it grabs you very nicely, and it makes you interested in a story. So all that's successful, but aren't you surprised after watching an episode? It's probably a better question after we've watched the entire run of the series. Aren't you surprised that this has taken everybody who watches television so captive so quickly?
Well, because it's real. Yeah. I like all these like Criminal Minds shows and things like that, and SVU. It changes it so much when you know this is a real story.
But do you watch like on there's a couple shows that are like Dateline, where they kind of use an hour and sometimes 2 hours to tell this type of story. And once I watch one for a minute or 2 minutes, I can't stop. And then sometimes when the hour or 2 hours are over, they still don't definitively tell you if the person you've been watching for that whole time is or is not the guilty party. That always disturbs me. I've seen a bunch of episodes where at the end they go, is Jim the one who did it? We'll never know. Back after this. And you go, oh, come on. I've been watching this for 2 hours. Tell me if he did it or not.
You know what hit me in just episode one was the terrible, I don't know how to describe it other than watching what his parents have gone through.
Yeah.
To this day,
yeah.
Recounting these miserable 18 years when their son was in prison.
Sure. Right.
And, you know, I don't even know. He was exonerated in by DNA evidence in 2003. He returned home to a crush of cameras and a family who always believed he was innocent. And now there are reports that came up that said we're only seeing one side of the story.
Right, 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 right.
I don't know who to believe.
There's a moment where he comes home. I will quickly say spoiler alert, although what I'm about to divulge is no major part of the story. It was just one of my favorite moments of the film yesterday, or the TV series. He comes home and he's greeted by family members, some of which he hasn't seen in a very, very long time. And it's a whole new living situation. The house now has his kids that were very little when he went away to jail are now much, much older. And he's being welcomed by the family. And he's holding a little girl who I assume is his granddaughter. And they say to him, they go, "Who's this?" And he looks at the kid and he goes, "I don't know." He's just holding this little baby, but he's not sure who the baby is. And I thought, yeah, that's about as real as can be. He's so happy to be back with his family. He's holding one of them, but he's not quite sure who it is.
But he's been gone for 18 years. A lot has changed.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, God bless him. He was not going to. It's like really weird, too, where it seems in this documentary, I'll say it that way, that they are totally railroading him. And they say, if you just admit to this,
right,
you can be up for parole. But if you don't admit your guilt, you're never getting out.
Right.
And he's talking about, I'm not going to admit that I did it because I didn't do it.
Yeah.
I can't imagine being in jail for 18 years knowing you're innocent. And they had appealed for years.
Right.
I mean, I would have given up.
A lot of people would have given up, but, you know, this is a story that we've been told from other angles that people sometimes are, you know, they're said, we'll cut you a deal. You just have to admit that you did it. And like in this case, the person has the big decision to make, but I didn't do it.
All right. And now there was a part, you said the incident with a cat.
Yeah.
815 says, if you look at the cat incident report, which they do show, and other things Stephen Avery got in trouble for, he always admitted his wrongdoings when he had done something wrong. Whereas he proclaimed his innocence both times, he has served serious time in prison. Someone else then says, that innocent guy who burned the cat alive, you guys watch way too much TV. This was produced by a team that was working for his defense. The DNA evidence proves it wasn't him. I mean, what else do we have to say?
Yeah, that seems to be conclusive, doesn't it? It's DNA evidence. So, all right, let's do this. We'll take a little bit of a break. If you want to jump in, please do. We're at 312-981-7200. More in a moment. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, we are talking about a Netflix original series. It's called The Making of a Murderer. And I only say this because a lot of people have just texted, what is this? I came in at the tail end. It's on Netflix only, original series, over 10 years, two filmmakers documented, quote, the making of a murderer.
I can't remember the last time there was a TV show that I'm saying this about a span of 10 days or 2 weeks. I've had six different people that I know from different places, some here at work, some that I just know in real life. And they've all said the same thing. Are you watching this thing on Netflix? Are you watching this murder show? You got to see it. That many people in a short span of time. I don't remember that ever happening with a TV show.
No, but I guess since we're only one episode into it, the crime that he was in jail for is not, there was another crime
that's coming up where he did
murder someone.
Well, yeah.
And
don't give away too much.
No, I'm just saying the making of a murderer.
Yeah.
And, you know, my question, and some of the people have texted, what about the victims' families?
Mm-hmm.
And that's true. What, you know, if you were the parent of somebody who was murdered or beaten or whatever, mm-hmm. and now all this is getting accolades for being like a great series, wouldn't it bother you if this was your family member that was attacked?
I would want the truth to be told by any means. If something happened, I would want the truth to be known. So if that's what this show is going to do, is let us know what really happened, then that's a good thing.
630 says, I've been down the rabbit hole ever since we finished watching this over the holidays. There are pages and pages and pages of theories and discussions on Reddit's making a murderer page.
Yeah.
I know Roe had someone on yesterday.
I think the sheriff, right? Did he have the sheriff from there,
Or a journalist.
Oh, is that who
he
it was?
He had somebody on discussing the case. And I got to be honest with you, I couldn't listen to it because I hadn't seen it yet, and I don't know a lot of it.
All right.
And now we get a text right now, just now. Hey, are you guys watching the show Making a Murderer on Netflix?
Oh, as a matter of fact, yes. We have been.
And 90% of your listeners have just recently heard about this show. Stop talking about it. There's nothing that I'm not reading from reports that are out there. Nothing has been given away, and you need to experience this on your own.
Yeah,
you need to watch it.
You know, one of my hopes in this is it opens people up, and I know that things have changed a little bit in the last 5 or 10 years. But there was a time that most people, if they would have heard documentary, that would have been all they needed to stay away from something like this. I think all of a sudden people are much more open to documentary filmmaking, which is a really great way to tell a story. So I hope that one of the things this solves is that stigma that if there's a documentary, don't stay away from it. There's some really, really great ones out there.
We're also talking about the death penalty, which I know is no longer happening in Illinois. There's a moratorium on the death penalty, which always sounds funny when I say that.
Moratorium and death penalty?
Yeah, in the same sentence. Doesn't it sound ironic, kind of in a weird way? But these are some of the reasons why I am not really for it, because there are just times when it seems like it's a completely cut and dry case, 100% evidence and everything, and yet mistakes are made.
Yeah, you do have that element. I would hope that any time they go forward with death penalties, it's only in cases where it's 100% conclusive that there is no gray matter.
But doesn't this look like 100% conclusive?
It looks like it. Right. All right, let's do this. A break, some news, and then more show. If you want to jump in at any time, you know, 312-981-7200 will get that done. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Steve, can you stick around for just a little bit?
For you, anything.
Wendy and I were discussing this a little bit off air, and I would love to have you a part of this. Last
night, we do our best show off the air, by the way.
Oh, so much better.
Sorry, listeners.
Show. So much better off the air. last night in Vermont, Donald Trump had something of a pep rally of supporters. And I think I watched about a half an hour of it on MSNBC. I didn't watch the whole thing. I watched about 30 minutes of it. And it was such a circus that I loved it and hated it at the exact same time.
Train wreck. You had to look at it.
It was a train wreck. It really was. Although I think anyone who was there and is in support of Donald Trump will tell you, even though I'm using the word train wreck, certainly, they would consider it to be a huge success on every level. What happened several times during the event, and I'll play a little audio for you. What happened several times during the event is people came in, they gave away a bunch of tickets, and the room held 1,200 people, but they gave away way, way more. So right off the bat, people were upset because they had tickets and they still didn't get to come in. And they didn't really screen properly who was coming in. They were under the assumption it would be predominantly, and it was predominantly, Donald Trump supporters, but you also had a lot of protesters.
Yeah, you're going to get that.
That was
without a doubt
throughout the whole.
And that shouldn't have surprised him at all, because he's got a lot of people that comment on what he does.
Well, that's one of the reasons they issued so many tickets, because they were, Bill, at the gate actually asking people, are you a supporter or are you not?
Well, one guy came in and he had a Bernie Sanders button, but you couldn't see it because of the way his coat was.
Well,
and
then
he said,
if you're going to go disrupt, you're not going to say, no,
right,
I hate the guy.
Right. But he said when we came in, they let us in, everything was fine. And then as soon as I got in and they saw that I had a Bernie Sanders button, they quickly escorted me out. That was it. I couldn't be in the room anymore. You know, and I guess for...
He should have kept it in his pocket till later.
Right. And then showed it.
I mean, really, don't show your hands, buddy.
Well, Donald Trump seemed to enjoy any discourse in the crowd. There were several times where
people... He thrives on that.
It was... For people who didn't see it... I did stand-up for 10 years. It was much more like he was doing stand-up in a club than it was a guy running for president trying to convince people that his way would be the best for the country. He did little vignettes. He did little scenes of what other support rallies are like for the other candidates. He mentioned some that weren't very well attended and how poor those were.
So it was like a one-man show.
It really was. You know what it reminded me of? Remember when Charlie Sheen went completely off his rocker and
yes.
He did that 10 or 12 city tour, and he just kind of sat in a chair and talked about the way things were according to Charlie.
The tiger stuff, what was he talking about?
Tiger blood.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he's got tiger blood in him. It was Donald Trump's version of that, kind of, but the crowd ate it up. They loved every second of it. So you kept having people interrupt him. That happened several times. And like I said, he seemed to enjoy that. And then he would tell them, he would point at whoever it was, and he would announce that his bouncers were going to take care of them. And then he had this running theme of, and don't let him have his coat. Don't let him get his coat. It's cold outside. We'll teach him a lesson.
Did you do that when you used to do stand-up? Was that in your act?
Yeah,
I'd kick
people out and not let them have their coats back.
That kills.
It was a big crowd pleaser. It really was. Here's a little bit of audio, and keep in mind, I know you're only hearing it, you're not seeing it. the spectacle of it was very strange because it was people. Remember how on Jerry Springer they would just go Jerry, Jerry for no reason. Like whenever they felt like it, they would just chant Jerry, Trump, Trump. They would just yell Trump over and over.
Doesn't work. You need two syllables.
Donald, Donald. Right. Makes more sense.
Or Trumpy, Trumpy,
Trumpy. Here's just a little bit of the fun you missed last night in Vermont as Donald Trump met with his friends.
Outside, there's like 20,000 people. We can't get them in. So you are very, very lucky tonight, I hope, right?
Trump. You sure they're not saying
Trump? I think it was Trump. Maybe Trump.
Unbelievable. Get him out. Get him out. Get him out. I will tell you something about the protesters, and I respect what they're doing, but sure. I really believe unless they have a substance abuse problem, which is probably there.
How is that funny?
He definitely does.
This guy knows what I'm talking about. He was doing stand-up.
Honestly, they're very rude, but it makes for more fun of... Isn't it more fun this way?
This is like a character. This is not a human being. This is like a persona that this is not real life, is it?
I don't know what's real anymore. Cause normally if something like this got this deep, you'd look into it. You'd go, well, this guy wouldn't hold this much attention. Why are this many people? I want to say fooled by him, but I don't even think fooled by him is the word. You know what you're getting with him. That's what he's selling. He's selling his version of honesty. But boy, is it strange.
But a substance abuser, that's funny.
It got a nice laugh from the crowd. Every time he did this, anytime he'd single anybody or anything out, and like I said, he was doing impressions of the other candidates and what their rallies are like, and he was saying how much fun it would be to run against Bernie Sanders, but he'd much rather run against Hillary and stuff like that. It was a weird high school pep rally. It was like a bizarro world pep rally.
Well, just the idea of a heckler... at a political campaign where usually they try to, a candidate will say, let him speak or, you know, wait for them to be taken out or
right.
whatever. You know, this, you know, never get him out of here. Get him out.
Right.
You know
it was abrasive.
But it's just.
That's him.
No, I know. It speaks to him. It just speaks to how he is operating in a completely other world
yeah.
than what we would ever expect from a political candidate.
Steve, last night he told the story about how at Bernie Sanders' rally, and I saw the video of this. I know what he's referring to. A woman came up to speak and just kind of took over for a minute. She was just kind of giving her version of what she wanted to say. And Bernie Sanders just kind of stood back and let her talk for a second with one of his advisors. And Donald Trump he acted it out. He was showing what happened and they were loving it. They were buying it and his friend and he stood there and he didn't know what to say. And this woman took over. Well, no one's going to do that to me. Huge applause, you know.
Yeah, but did you hear him in this audio say, you know, oh, that's rude. Look who's rude. Look in the mirror.
I know.
That's, I think, what is so shocking to me is his lack of manners. I like that he speaks his mind. I do. I'm sorry. I like maybe not having a political person running the country.
Sure.
Not him, but somebody.
Right.
But when, like, oh, well, that's rude. He is so rude.
But he doesn't see it that way.
Ah.
He sees it, anything that comes at him and doesn't agree with him. I was telling you before how now he's taking shots at Whoopi Goldberg because Whoopi Goldberg has been talking about him on The View and doesn't like him. So now he's talking about how awful Whoopi Goldberg is. He used to do it with Rosie O'Donnell. He's done it with,
yeah.
I mean, there's the list of people that he's done it with. It's always the same thing. Well, they're stupid. They're fat. They're ugly. They don't know what they're talking about. It's the kind of thing you would say if you were in fifth grade and somebody was talking about you. But he's running for president. He's winning. He's on the Republican side anyway.
So is Charlie Sheen. It's weird
they're both,
you say that.
They're both winning. They are both winning. But it's such a strange thing to watch because I've been watching this sort of thing from political candidates forever. And like you, I do welcome somebody who comes at it from a different angle. But not this. This isn't right.
That's like I'd like a woman president, and I don't know if Hillary's the right woman. Seriously.
But why not a woman if not that one? Right. I get what you mean. Right. That's why when people said, like, when he and Ben Carson and to an extent Carly Fiorina came up and they go, they're not your typical lifelong politicians. They've been doing other things. One of them's a doctor. One of them read a comic. You know, I respect that. I like that
I
idea that somebody could do this.
And it broadens the playing field.
Right. But why is this... why is it him? He's from reality shows and from business and stuff.
Well, the business is what is getting everyone's...
I guess so.
Getting everyone excited.
Right.
If he knows how to run a business, he can run the country. I guess technically the country is a business, but you can't be rude. You've
right.
got to be tactful, don't you?
You would think. It'd be in our best interest to have a president who's in some way tactful. Wouldn't you get nervous if he's like this with the American public when he's sitting down with China or Russia or you pick the country?
Korea. They're going to do an H-bomb here. They're going to practice their bomb here at Trump's house.
Maybe.
I don't even know. Chris, what do you think about all this?
A couple thoughts. Number one, these rallies aren't meant to be your typical political speech where it's cohesive thought with, you know, each thought is germane to the next thought. It's more to provide raw footage for the news teams, because when you listen to the news clips, they sound like they were just kind of snapped out of a stream of cohesive, lucid thought. But when you're listening to the entire thing, he's just hopping from topic to topic. And my other thought is that he's speaking.
It is like he's ranting, kind of, Chris,
yeah,
right?
And,
like, just.
Well, here's the other thing. He's speaking in the thought pattern of his audience. Remember 2009 when all the Tea Partiers were on TV?
Yeah.
And they would say three random thoughts all linked together. They'd be like, read the bill, Muslim, socialist. And those were like three different topics all combined into one weird sentence. And that's exactly what his speeches are. They're communications at their thought level. They don't think in cohesive, lucid, logical, reasonable fashion. They think in the terms of three completely different thoughts all in one paragraph. So when he says, you know, Hillary, kick him out, Obama's a loser, that communicates on their level, because in their mind they think socialist, Muslim, read the bill all together, even though those are three completely different topics.
But he's hitting the buzzwords and the buzz phrases that we need to hear for it to
right.
somehow register, I
right.
guess.
But he needs to do it in a more effective way, like get some bongos and snap his fingers as he's doing it.
But that's how his audience thinks. His audience doesn't think like how we think. When we want to hear a speech, we want to hear the speaker have like connective tissues between the subjects they talk about.
You would think.
Although that said, this is a pep rally. If I'm at a pep rally, and Bill, you said this is kind of like a high school pep rally.
That's what it reminded me of.
But that's what you just want to get excited about it. You're not even really listening to what anybody's saying. You're there to show your support.
Right.
And what's happened to all the Tea Party people, by the way?
Kind of evaporated a little bit.
They run out of tea?
There's no more tea.
Well, I think they've been consumed and sort of sucked into the Donald Trump movement.
You know what? To an extent, that's where they went, right? That's kind of where they went. Well, we appreciate the call, Chris. We really do.
Thank you, Chris.
The other thing he kept doing was, and I know he's prone to do this, there was a lot of exaggeration. And I'll just give you one quick example, although it went on all night long, or the 30 minutes that I watched.
Why do you waste your time?
I couldn't stop.
You could have been watching Making of a Murderer.
I couldn't stop. I thought I was watching Making of a Murderer. he was talking about there was a guy videotaping the rally, and he said, the problem with the people videotaping the rally is they're not accurate. They don't want to show how many people are really at these. While he's saying it, I'm watching on MSNBC, it's a wide shot of the hall filled to capacity with every empty seat, with every full seat, I should say. And he said, you know, I come home and my wife says to me, how did it go? And I say, it was okay, because she watched it on TV and thought, oh, there wasn't much of a turnout. Well, they were showing it at the time he was saying it.
That it was a packed house.
That it was full. They weren't doing a quick shot, a close-up of him. They were showing that everyone was there. They were there to see him. But that's what he keeps doing, is all throughout this thing, he kept pulling out these exaggerations, and you go, you know that's not right, and I know that's not right. How do you keep, you can't, when you're the president, can you do that?
I don't know what's going on. Lynn, you like this guy, don't you?
No, actually, he's not my candidate, but I am a Republican, but I finally dawned on me what his appeal was, at least what I think his appeal is to people.
What is it?
And I think it's that he is the antithesis of any political candidate ever. And you know what? People are so sick and tired of your run-of-the-mill politicians that talk out of both sides of their mouth, and I'm talking about both parties.
Without a doubt.
They're fed up with it.
Well, Lynn, think about it again.
But
bringing
you know
up,
what? Nobody has voted yet. Some of these people, I bet you, would have not voted in 15 years that go to these things. I mean, he's kind of like a phenomenon. Wait and see what the vote is. I mean, I'm still convinced you're not going to win, but I do see why people like the guy, actually. I didn't at first, but now I do, because he's just the antithesis of
what your typical politician is.
Yeah.
You're right on that. Thank you, Lynn.
Another quick exaggeration. He was talking about good business versus bad business. And he goes, take Marvel Entertainment, for instance. He goes, Marvel Entertainment, that's the people who put out the comic book and make the movies. He goes, Marvel Entertainment has 4 out of the top 5 grossing films of all time. And then he continues to give his example. Well, they don't. They don't have 4 out of the 5 top grossing films of all time.
Iron Man.
Iron Man is maybe in the top 10, but they don't have 4 out of the top
Avengers.
5. But he says these things, and he says them, and then he moves on.
He's just throwing stuff out.
Do you want
research, Bill? What do you need that for?
Do you want a guy who's in the Oval Office just doing that?
No, I don't. I agree with what Lynn just said, too. He is just the opposite of what we expect in a politician. It's got all the young high school kids talking about it, like, did you see Trump on SNL? So in a great way, these kids are now paying attention to presidential candidates before they can even vote.
Yeah.
So maybe by the time they vote, they'll pay more attention.
Right.
This is really changing things where people are watching debates because he's entertaining. And him being different from everyone else, when Lynn was saying that, I'm thinking, remember when you were in high school? Again, this is all going back to high school. It's like he's at a high school pep rally.
Yeah.
You get a new teacher that just started this year, and he's young, and he's cool, and he's got a ponytail.
Yeah.
And he may not really be that good of a teacher, but he's not an old fogey, and he's not your typical view of a teacher.
Right.
You got this young, hip guy. That gets you more excited to go to the class every day, doesn't it?
It should, yeah.
It's kind of the same thing with Trump. It's something different. It's refreshing. And it's like, I don't know, I'm willing to give something a shot here because what we have isn't working.
Right. Yeah, there is that. If you look at the numbers that they've done on the debates, they're blowing the other ones out of the water. And he, by the way, has mentioned that he should get a piece of that because the reason we're watching is because of him. So he wants some of the ad revenue from the debates.
See, I find that to be funny.
It is funny.
But
that's
he's
what I mean.
Serious.
He was doing, it was like watching Andrew Dice Trump yesterday as I'm watching this thing. It wasn't a guy running for president. It was Hickory Dickory Dock. That's what I was watching last night on MSNBC.
630 says Trump will win by the largest margin in history.
Did that get texted in from Donald Trump? Did he text that in?
Oh, I think so. What's the area code? From where he is?
666.
From outer space?
Yes.
666.
All right. A little bit of a break and then more show. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right. We're talking about Donald Trump. I'm losing my voice.
I'm losing my mind.
Trump will bitch slap a foreign diplomat as president. His words
would.
Are slaps.
He would.
He's like the El Chapo.
He's the El Chapo of politics. El Trumpo. I was giving an example yesterday how he just says things, even if they're not true. He just slips them in and we just accept it. He was talking about good business deals and he was relaying the story of Marvel Comics being sold to Disney. This was during his rally yesterday. So he goes, in Marvel Comics, very smart people. They've got 4 of the top 5 grossing movies of all time. I'm looking at the list of the 10 top grossing movies of all time.
Any one of them?
Star Wars, Force Awakens, Avatar, Titanic, Lord of the Rings, Pirates of the Caribbean, Toy Story 3, Alice in Wonderland, Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides, Dark Knight, Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone. Not one of the 10 a Marvel film, and yet it's one of those times where he just says it. They've got 4 of the 5 top grossing films of all time. They know what they're doing. They know what they're doing, but he's wrong.
But see, you're the only one that would know he's wrong because you are a film geek and you would even think to look. I would hear it and go, yeah, I guess they did pretty well. I know.
That's his game.
Well, it's working.
I guess
it's totally
working.
630 has finished listening to us.
They're done?
Yep.
All right.
Listen to Wendy and Bill for their entire careers. They are wrong about Trump. I have lost all respect for them. Trump is a real American and they have spent an hour trying to bring him down. It's only been
about a half hour.
Yeah.
I have listened to them for the last time today.
All right. We're sorry.
Bye-bye. You know what? I'm not doing anything. You are saying what has happened. I am giving an opinion of how I feel. I think the guy is a whack job.
If you want to vote for him, please, all means, go and vote for
him. Have a voice. That's why we vote.
Right. Neither one of us are going to stand by any polling places and try to convince you as you walk in or out that you've done the right thing, you're about to do the right thing. I'm just saying, I watched this rally last night, and it petrified me. I couldn't stop watching. I'm so afraid. It was like the Japanese film El Ringu. It scared me.
I don't even know what that is.
It scared me.
About one of the Beatles?
Yeah, it was about the drummer for the Beatles. I think he's a fantastic performer. I really do.
That's it. Because even like, you know, a lot of people say, oh, he knows how to run a business. He's a great businessman. I don't know that to be true 100%. I just know that he's great material when you have a radio show.
He's the same guy that 18 months ago was telling Gary Busey he was fired at a board table. That doesn't lead to the presidency. Woodrow Wilson never fired Gary Busey.
What if Gary Busey will be his running mate and be the vice president? Because then, really?
And I would vote for him.
I'm going with Alec Baldwin to Canada. Which, how come he never left?
That's the thing you do. You always say, if this happens, I'm moving to Canada, but you never follow through. No one's ever followed through on that promise, ever.
If Gary Busey is the vice president with Donald Trump being the president, I'm moving somewhere. I don't even know where.
Just somewhere.
I'm out of here.
Somewhere far away.
I am gone. All right.
Get that guy George. Remember that old guy George that looked kind of like Dick Cheney who was on his show? He'd always sit behind him and just nod a lot, whatever Trump would say.
I never watched that show.
You never watched The Apprentice?
And I should have when Cyndi Lauper was on it because I adore her.
Right.
But even that couldn't get me to watch it. Never saw it in my life. It's just another day with Donald Trump.
Yeah.